Public wants to see what's going on with those meetings.
They should, yeah. Yeah.
You know what they should? They should be on tape.
They've got some management problems.
Yeah.
Board problems. Very much so.
That's what
they
have.
You ready?
Okay.
Okay, let's try that again. And welcome to the April 3rd meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session. The board, under pending litigation, the board has ratified a settlement agreement resolving a dispute concerning the special education and related services made available to a student in the matter of N2006100339. Resolution of the dispute will result in the district funding compensatory education services and future education services for the student. Marilyn Roger moved for a motion, and Dave Peter seconded the motion. There was a unanimous vote by the board to approve the settlement. The board discussed case number CV061747. The board also discussed pending litigation, San Luis Coastal Unified School District versus Jeff J.H. Edwards Company regarding Sunnyside tenancy. And the board discussed the status of negotiations with the California School Employees Association and the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business from board members?
Yes.
Okay. Seeing that, we'll move on. Let's go on to approval of minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of March 20th and March 27th? It's been moved by Mr. Spadafore.
Second.
And seconded by Mr. Peter. Any discussion?
Oh. Are we on yet? No? Okay. Hello? Are we back?
We're back.
All right. It has a sentence in the minutes. Board members offered their impressions of the recent study session in which they heard concerns related to specific professional development and a desire to allow greater collaborative planning. And then went on to a proposed revised policy and blaming No Child Left Behind for a lot of the frustration. But I thought there was a really important point made just to lend accuracy to the board's response. So this was my suggestion that we add right after the sentence that ends to allow greater collaborative planning on page 4. The sentence that board members reported favorably on the healthy climate in which academic freedom was discussed, allowing teachers, students, staff, and university visitors to candidly share ideas. A hope was expressed that the climate for open dialogue could continue. And it seemed to me that several board members talked about what a healthy climate it was, and the dialogue was great, and that one outcome could be that type of a climate would continue in the district. Then just not to change anything that's here, but just to add those two sentences right in the middle. And I think I emailed that to you, Mark. Did I email that to you? Do you have a copy of that? Maybe it was somebody else, one of you. Oh, it was Chris. All right, we emailed you about something else, Mark. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Mrs. Dickinson, while I don't object
to the tenor of what you have to say, I do continue to object to wordsmithing the minutes. I think we want to correct them, and it's only when something has been reported in error. And so I'm not going to support changing what Mrs. Holmes wrote in these minutes.
I'm going to agree with Marilyn. However, I would support that insertion in the minutes tonight as something that you would support. So we could ask Mrs. Holmes about that.
I'm happy to record these however you choose. That was a tricky little item because technically all I'm obligated to write down here is any particular motions that you make, and you didn't make any formal actions in that particular item. You had a lot of valuable discussion.
So
we are going to be doing in the next time we have a study session, in the next meeting after that, we will report actual actions that are proposed rather than specific other feedback.
Well, I think the notion of the minutes is to, and trusting, I trust Mrs. Holmes to record the actions of the board in a manner that the public looking at it would understand what we talked about, not necessarily, again, as we've discussed, verbatim, although that's certainly not the case here. I guess from my perspective, I'm going to err on the side, although I don't consider it an error, on allowing Mrs. Holmes to be our recorder of the minutes, and then if there are things that we would like to see the minutes reflected of the particular meeting, we can talk about that at the time. And that's why I'm going to go with what Mrs. Rogers said, which is supporting the motion as it is to accept these minutes with the idea that your concern be reflected in the minutes of tonight's meeting regarding these minutes, if that makes sense. So I don't know if I have support from the rest of the board for that or not. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the issue here is one more of actions than words, whatever we write in the document. I think we all benefit from having an open collaborative process, and I think we showed that at the academic freedom discussion session. And I really think if we keep, you know, telegraphing that to the audience, to the folks who come here and speak, the willingness to communicate with them, that's really what the most important issue is, not what we put in the minutes.
Okay, that sounds
good. So we have a motion on the floor. And a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. And is that also for March 27th as well? Or do we don't need a second motion on that because I think everyone was at that meeting?
Perfect.
Okay, good. All right, let's move on then to presentations. And this is the PDK Lay Citizen of the Year, Ed Harris, Mr. Robinette.
Yes, thank you. Phi Delta Kappa is an educational organization, and one of the many things they do is to honor volunteers in our school system. And so this kind of begins the honor season for us. Almost every other board meeting will be bringing different groups, employee groups of the year. But tonight we really want to honor one of those individuals who have done so much for us in our schools, and to talk about those accolades, I'd like to first introduce Mrs. Mary Lou Gooden.
Good evening. My name is Mary Lou Gooden, and I'm the principal of Los Ranchos Elementary School, and it's my pleasure to introduce Ed Harris, Phi Delta Kappa Lay Citizen of the Year. Ed is remarkably generous with his time and expertise. And I'm just going to mention a few of the things that he does for San Luis Coastal and our community. At Los Ranchos, Ed has been an active volunteer for 10 years, where he continues to volunteer even though Carl, who's here, is in high school now. So we've had the benefit of Ed's generosity for a long time, even when his son isn't there anymore. Some of the positions he held include yearbook editor, school photographer, and most of the committee chairs for our instrumental music program at Laguna Middle School and San Luis Obispo High School. And in fact, tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, he's taking off with the band to, what was it, the quartermaster?
Yeah.
He's going to oversee the food for the band trip tomorrow, for San Luis High's band trip. So he just is remarkable in all the things he does. And his support has really allowed many of the musicians to be able to play in smaller groups and get a little more attention than they would with just the one teacher. Those of us that know Ed, we really appreciate the fact that he just does all this without any attention or notice to himself. And I've been pumping him the last couple of days to try to include all the details. And he's like, no, that's enough. You don't have to say anything. It's really remarkable. Besides San Luis Coastal, the community is also benefits from Ed's generosity. He was a Cub Scout troop leader. He's an active Rotarian. He's very involved in the Mervyn's Child Spree program. He's on the board of the San Luis Obispo County Youth Symphony, and he's a volunteer with the San Luis Obispo Symphony's music van. So this is someone we should sing praises to, really a remarkable person, and we are very fortunate to have him in the district. Congratulations, Ed. And the plaque says, San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education recognizes Ed Harris as our esteemed Phi Delta Kappa Lay Citizen of the Year 2006-07. Congratulations again, Ed.
Ed, would you like to address the board? And then afterwards, we're going to take a short recess.
Great. I'd just like to say I enjoy helping out in such a great school district, great staff, teachers, administrators, and students, and it's just really enjoyable, and I like to see things become successful, so it's a great experience for me as well. Thank you.
And we're going to take about a 10-minute recess. We have some cake, and we'd like to honor you. Thank you very
great,
much.
This is also, there's just all the
great
paperwork related to it.
Super. Well, that's fun. Well, I appreciate that.
Sure.
You were surprised.
Well deserved. Well deserved.
This is Roger. All right, let's move on to correspondence. The board received a letter dated March 21st from Kent Taylor regarding his appointment to the Personnel Commission. The board also received an email today from Jody Evans from the San Luis Obispo High School Agriculture Department supporting the PE waiver at San Luis Obispo High School. And then the board also received correspondence from Mr. Jones regarding the PE waiver at San Luis Obispo High School and supporting the PE waiver at San Luis Obispo High School. And then Mr. Spadafore just gave me something from the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. This looks like this supports the not going forward with the...
Within that parameter, I would like for you to consider ag education. When I think of ag education, and I just keep hearing about the economic trends within this county, what is our largest revenue generator but agriculture? But what do we have in the schools regarding ag education? The classes keep disappearing. That may be because we have declining enrollment, or maybe we don't have the budget for it, or maybe with a budget you wouldn't have teachers for it. I have to tell you that last week I spent all week as a judge for SAE projects, FFA SAE projects, which means supervised agricultural experience projects. And that's where the kids compete with various projects, which may include livestock being beef, swine, lamb, poultry, then there's work experience, which could be welding, farming, it's in a vast array of projects that they can participate in. And I have to say that not only the San Luis Coastal District kids did very well, but so did Paso, Tascadero, Parkfield, Templeton, Shandon. I mean, we judged all those school projects, and the kids were just totally amazing. And I shouldn't call them kids. I should call them folks, because they are really not kids with the projects that they presented. So I want to ask you to really give ag education a fair chance in your budget proposals. It's very important, because if you consider the statistics that you have already, one-third of the kids that graduate from high school go on to college, and a third of those only graduate from college. So what happens to the rest of the people? Where do they go? We've already lost most of our vocational and technical education within the schools, except for welding. Okay, we still have ag mechanics at Morro Bay High School, which is really good. A lot of the kids enjoy that. But I see the other schools like Paso, Templeton, and Tascadero, where they may have dropped ag mechanics and have taken up welding. So I just really want to push for ag education in your deliberations. Also, I am the president of Aggie Backers, which is a booster club or a booster organization at Morro Bay High School that supports EFFA programs at Morro Bay High School. We take a strong interest in what the kids or what the folks there in FFA need and how we can promote ag. Appreciative of what we've done there, and they're taking more of an interest in what we're doing. And I think that's needed in more schools. I know San Luis High has a great program in ag education, but we had one student.
Hey, Savage, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay.
Thanks.
Anyway, please consider ag education. It's a great program, and the kids that are not going to go to college really need it. Thank you.
And I would point out that Savage, for those of you who don't know him, is the parent of a couple of kids in our former students in our district, and a retiree who's really taken a lot of time to volunteer in the ag programs at Morro Bay High School. And thanks for all your work.
Thank you.
Thanks, Savage. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the board? Mr. Bedrigian.
Bruce Bedrigian, President, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. I was just wanted to know if this is the time that you would like to entertain comments on the PE waiver, or is it best to wait till that topic comes up for discussion? What's your plan?
It really is up to the speaker, whichever they'd rather do. If they'd like to comment now on an item that's going to be before the board, that's fine. If you want to wait until the item itself comes up, that's fine, too. Either way, we'll offer opportunities for people to provide input. I know it's a let's see where it is on the agenda. It's number 9 on the action discussion agenda. So if anybody would like to speak now, and then they'd be able to, you know, go home if that was something they would be comfortable in doing, that's fine. Otherwise, we'll just wait until that rolls around. So.
And we're fine. We're fine with waiting.
Okay.
The Teachers Association did put together a list of reasons why the association, after struggling with this issue and trying to do what's right, we've put together a list of reasons why we're going to oppose this waiver.
Okay.
And I'll give these to Ms. Holmes, and she can go ahead and give one. Ed, you already have one, but just, okay.
Okay, great.
Do you have
Thank
those
you.
In your packet? Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, then you have it in your packet with the list of reasons. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address the board during public comment? Okay. Seeing none, then let's move on to reports by school staff and student representatives of the board. Who'd like to go first over there? Want me to choose? Joe, all right.
Tomorrow is our first, our annual blood drive. We'll be having it from 10 to 2. And if anyone 17 and older is invited to come out and participate, and most of you look 17 and older. I don't know about some of the ladies on the board, but if you're willing. We're also having our cheer tryouts April 23rd. We have a new coach named Michelle Turner, and we're very excited about what we feel she can do with unanimous about the decision. They're also traveling to Reno on the 24th through the 28th to compete in another jazz festival, and we're enthused about that. Our FFA team will be we're sending four FFA teams, actually, to Fresno on the 12th through the 17th for regional competitions. Our athletic teams are doing well this season. Our softball team is undefeated in league, and our boys' tennis program is in its second season right now, and last season they won two matches, rather, and as of right now, they're 6-2 for the record, so we're really proud of what they've done with the program. And we're already gearing up for next year with ASB elections. We're holding elections for class officers next week, I believe. That's all.
And I just want to offer congratulations to you, Joe. I heard you got into Cal Poly next year, so congratulations. Brianna.
Well, we just had our disco rave spring dance, which was very fun, and I think everybody enjoyed it. Then we did the California High School exit exam testing on the week of the 19th. We also had our drama club show, The Three Musketeers, and I guess it went really, really well. Lots of people told me they liked it. This Thursday, we're having our academic letter and spring sports rally, which we're excited about. We're also doing a mock rock competition on the 19th of April, which is the first one we've done in a really long time. So ASB is really involved with that, and we're really excited to like try to bring it back and make it more popular. We're also having a inspirational speaker on the 20th. He's going to come talk to us about like school unity and things, and he's really well recognized, and we're excited about that as well. Auto Club also has been doing really well in the Skills USA. There was 3 gold medals and a silver. And then that was for the automotive service technician. And then there was a bunch of contest medalists as well. So we're really proud of our auto club. We also did a physics bridge contest, and we had a bunch of winners from that. And also, we have a very, Claire Doyle, who was part of the Poetry Out Loud, she went to Sacramento, and she didn't move on, but we were really excited that at least she went to Sacramento. And finally, we're doing this Tiger Plaza new, like, design for our school. And today, actually, $20,000 was donated by ASB for the project, and we might be getting started on that really soon, maybe over spring break. And so we're really excited about all that. And that's pretty much all.
And I know Dr. Valentine and I went to the motivational assembly last year, and it was great. It was really fun. So thank you for inviting us to that. Nicole.
Okay. It's actually Grace. Nicole won't be attending the board meetings anymore. It's okay. Pacific Beach is in our 5th marking period, and everyone is volunteering for that. The registration will be in by the end of the week. So it was a really, really big turnout, and I actually attended last year, so we're really hoping for, like, a lot of support. It will be held at Cuesta. So the science class grafted 30 apple trees. I know I touched base with you guys about that last time. So it was like a really big turnout with all the kids and volunteers and stuff. Mr. Kirk's drama class is getting pumped up for the field trip to PCPA in Santa Maria to see The Man Who Came to Dinner. It's our one big field trip we get to go on. Retired Teachers Association announced scholarship recipients, and Kayla Ruiz, one of our seniors, is a recipient, so congratulations to her. Our student of the month was Melissa Wilson. Let's see. Thanks to a grant we received, we now have a part-time counselor on our campus who will be working with mainly seniors in career exploration in our portfolio. So that's kind of like a really big step up for PB. So we're really, really, really like thankful for that. And youth career education and mentoring program, now at the fourth week of classroom instruction, tomorrow the students will be going into their job shadowing for the next 6 weeks. So they're really excited and stoked about that. That's it. Thanks.
Well, thanks. And just so that you can share this with the people at Pack Beach, just how important it is that you participate in Special Olympics. And I know the athletes really appreciate you guys doing that. Thank you. Okay, let's move on then to, is there anybody from the school staff that would like to address the board at this time? Yeah, and of course, if you'd like to go, please feel free to go ahead. And we appreciate your coming out. Seeing no school staff members wishing to speak, Mr. Miller, would you like to tell us about the status of the state budget?
I have nothing to report at this time.
Okay. Then let's move on to item number 3, Fix the No Child Left Behind Act. Dr. Valentine?
At the last board meeting, board member Mark Buckman suggested and received support from the board to bring back to the board a resolution drafted by the California School Boards Association regarding changes to the No Child Left Behind Act.
Mr. Buckman, would you like to make a motion on this?
I'd like to move that the board adopt this resolution and forward it on to our legislators.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Are there any comments? Would anybody like to address the board on this item? Mr. Bedrigian.
The Teachers Association want to formally thank Mr. Buckman for bringing this to everyone's attention and taking the time to do this. I think if every school board did this throughout the state, we'd be making more progress or even throughout the country. So thank you for doing that. It's very timely.
Thank you very much. Any other board member comments? Mrs. Dickinson.
All right. You want to talk about wordsmithing, breast, intent, and spirit of No Child Left Behind, because it's my personal evaluation that the actual and expressed intent was to undermine public education. Well, not the expressed intent, I think it was to undermine public education, and I think that's what it has done, although because we have such great teachers and parents and students, you know, they make lemonade out of lemons and have really helped students. But I don't think it was I think the intent was to undermine and privatize public education, actually. Then the one that says, whereas appropriate flexibility, it says here, whereas appropriate, the one that's suggested says, whereas appropriate flexibility for schools, particularly in a state as diverse as California, will allow the act to be implemented to best meet the broad needs of the state students. I would like to change the act to be implemented to read, will allow, whereas. Well, let me just read the whole thing. Whereas appropriate flexibility for schools, particularly in a state as diverse as California, will allow educational strategies that best meet the broad needs of the state students. And the reason I want to take out act to be implemented, because I'd like to leave room for Congress to just get rid of the act instead of writing in here that we hope that the act will be implemented just with edits. And modifications. The next one, just add in or eliminate. We ask, whereas the members of the California State Legislature play a critical role in working with our local schools, and we ask them now to join us in calling on Congress to fix, and I would like to add or eliminate NCLB. And then the last one, be it resolved. I think it's an error here, actually, because it says, be it resolved that the school district / County Office of Education. It's not supposed to be that way. I just thought we could put, whereas, be it resolved that the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, right? Okay, so that's an obvious change. Okay, anyway, and then I'd like it to read, be it resolved that the San Luis Coastal Unified School District joins the California School Boards Association in urging Congress to review and address necessary major amendments to the No Child Left Behind Act, including considering the option to discontinue this specific piece of legislation so that schools can successfully implement the expressed intent of leaving no child behind academically, unencumbered by the negative impact of this legislation as it is currently written. So that would be my suggestions.
Comments, Mr. Buckman?
If we take these one at a time, probably would be the easiest way to do this. On the first desire to change, whereas the expressed intent, the act itself, when it was introduced, the general intent and spirit of the No Child Left Behind Act is commendable. This had very strong bipartisan support in Washington.
We would support the California School Boards Association movement to fix the No Child Left Behind Act. I think that if we would like to, as a board, support the notion that we would like to see No Child Left Behind eliminated, I would support that as a separate resolution, but I can't support that right now given this. I don't think that that would, I can't speak for the California School Boards Association, but I don't think that there is support there, although I can't say 100% for eliminating the No Child Left Behind Act. And given that, I don't think that we could leave those, joins the California School Board Association in eliminating it, because I don't believe that that's the intent of the California School Boards Association. But I would like to support the resolution as it is, and then if it is in the board's interest to eliminate, to suggest an elimination of it, then I think that's another whole discussion we could have. And I would be willing to do that. Can we bring that forward on advanced agenda items?
I have a question.
Sure.
If we support this, can we go ahead and do a separate one that we want to eliminate it too? That's not
things. I would suggest that we add that in advanced agenda items.
Okay.
Would be my suggestion. And I'll put this aside.
Go
for that. I'm sorry, yep. Mrs. Roger, and then Mr. Buckman.
Mr. Buckman and I may have the same point. I will support the obvious necessary change, eliminating the County
yes.
Office of Education and yeah. making the change from the school district to the San Luis Coastal Unified School District.
And that would be an amendment that Mr. Buckman would have to accept. Okay. Mr. Buckman?
I would also point out that No Child Left Behind is just a PR name for the Elementary School Education Act. And so if we were to take a stand tonight that we wanted eliminated, we would be eliminating a lot of other things such as Title I and Title IX and a whole other bunch of series of programs that our district benefits from. So I think we need to be careful about what we wish for.
Dr. Valentine?
Very quickly, one typographical correction at the bottom. The date reads 2006, April. It should be 2007.
We trust Mrs. Holmes to make the necessary.
We can recover the money all the way.
Okay. Is there other discussion from the board on this item?
One last thing.
Yes, please, Mrs. Dickinson.
There is one thing I would like to eliminate that would go out with the whole, and that is military recruiting on campuses, which I would like to get rid of.
Mrs. Holmes, are you ready?
As amended. I'll move back to motion. Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Spadafore? Mr. Peter? Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Unger? Mrs. Roger?
Passes 6-0. Thank you. Let's move on then to item number 4, the technology update. Amelia?
It'll be warmed up here in a second. I'd like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share a brief overview of the progress we've made in refurbishing technology over the past 3 years in our district. And my name is Amelia Samoz. I'm the Director of Information Services and Technology. I'd like to begin by sharing a bit of historical background. And then we're going to talk about where we are now, cover the infrastructure, hardware, and tech support components of our EdTech plan, and talk about the new student information system that we're in the process of implementing to go live this fall. In the early 90s, San Luis Coastal was well on track to becoming a visionary, leading-edge technology district with a $300 million community bond that provided monies used to collaborate with SLO County in the installation of a district-wide fiber optic network that most of us refer to as the UMAN. Thanks to the board's vision and approval of this project, the UMAN gave us high-speed connectivity for all of our schools. This was a truly visionary and cutting-edge technology for its day. The bond also provided labs for all of our schools, mini labs in all of our libraries, and the district's 700 teachers at the time were each given a laptop, with many of our classrooms containing 4 PCs each. In the 90s, computer stations grew from 300 to over 3,000 PCs district-wide. As the 21st century began, the vision collided with reality as district enrollment began to decline. At the same time, California entered its period of budgetary woes. Money was short, schools were closed, and our department lost one full-time tech position. Our staff struggled to maintain aging PCs and network hardware, for which there was little or no refurbishing money. Staff operated in a triage mentality, jumping from one emergency to the next. These years of unregulated technology growth, staffing cuts, and no budgeted tech plan created a runaway locomotive where teachers and students were frustrated. In the spring of 2004, however, we were at a crossroads, which led to extensive research, consensus building, and decision making on what direction to take with technology. Once direction was determined and funding approved by the board, we implemented a major infrastructure project that removed obsolete network hardware with minimal downtime during the summer of 2005. This project restored the wide area network to efficiency, improved network manageability, and added technical support with improved user satisfaction, which continues to increase as the ongoing replacement of technology is funded annually. Do I need to back up? Were you able to hear me okay? Okay, thanks. The district's EdTech Steering Committee, funding and budget, and monitoring and evaluation. This evening, I'm focusing on areas 3 and 4, and specifically on the progress we've made with the replacement plan. As you know, $500,000 is budgeted annually and has made a world of difference in providing a stable, secure, and manageable network for our staff and students. The replacement plan has also gone a long way toward making technology access more equitable amongst our schools. Since the fund was first implemented in the summer of 2000, thanks to your approval, we have installed over 1,000 new PCs district-wide to ensure that every classroom has at least one PC that is scheduled for replacement on a regular cycle, In addition, we have PCs placed in the following areas so that we have a basic, well-rounded technology program district-wide. The PCs are on a 4 to 5 year replacement cycle. It's up, you're fine. And our servers are on a 6 to 7, switches, routers, 7, 8, 6 to 7, depending. Okay, thank you. While current funding has allowed us to replace obsolete hardware, the new district standard calls for an overall decline in the number of PCs throughout the district. This chart illustrates that PCs have declined in number by about 27% over the past 3 years, from 3,000 to approximately 2,200. We are able to maintain PC and network support at appropriate levels for the hardware that's currently in place, and our PC tech ratio is currently at 600 PCs to one technician. The district standard software applications have increased quite a bit over the past 3 years, from 29 to 220 applications. That's about 1,000% increase, and this number is quite large for an organization our size, requiring a significant amount of resources to evaluate, install, and maintain. The $500,000 replacement fund also maintains servers and network hardware on an appropriate cycle. And as we look ahead to summer 2008, we're planning another major infrastructure project that will replace obsolete network hardware at the elementary sites. The new student information system has been a large focus of the EdTech plan this year as we transition from SASE to PowerSchool. This slide represents the many benefits of PowerSchool and clearly illustrates the additional features that a new system provides, and I'll be happy to give you a hard copy of this so that you can read each of the bullets. Question? CSIS IDs, student identifiers? This has a mechanism for importing the student IDs. Correct. Thank you. A. In addition, all K-12 teachers will receive instruction on classroom-based attendance, reporting, and the gradebook component will follow a phased-in approach with grades 7 through 12 implementing next year and elementary scheduled the following. So this will be the first time we have a district-wide standardized gradebook. PowerSchool goes live this fall after July 1, and there's additional information and a timeline on our website that's listed there. So as you can see over the years, thanks to your ongoing support, the superintendent and the administration, we now have a system that is consistently funded, secure, and standardized across the district. This slide represents the progress we've made during the past 3 years, and we're well on our way to meeting the goals and benchmarks of the district's technology plan. Thank you for helping us get back on track. Thank you. Are there any questions at this time, or be happy to respond?
I'm up. I'm on deck. Can we get some lights? I can't. I got to read my notes. These are just sort of random questions, background information. Mm-hmm. What is the $500,000? I wasn't on the board when the EdTech plan was approved, but the $500,000 is an equipment replacement dedicated for that purpose. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yes.
So, what's the total budget, and how many people are in our EdTech department?
In the Information Services and Technology Services Department.
Yeah.
The department budget is between $800,000 and $900,000, I believe, and that covers salaries and computer repair and some of those services for our staffing. So that's separate from the $500,000.
Okay. And how many people are out there maintaining? Was it 2.8 full-time? Is that?
PC techs?
Yeah.
We increased by 2.8. We have 3.8 PC techs, 3 full-time network specialists, and 1.5 time student data technicians that support our system, the PowerSchool system they'll be supporting.
Sorry, how many students?
1.5 positions, FTEs, myself, and we have an assistant for the department, administrative okay. assistant.
Got it. So about PowerSchool, that'll be a uniform platform that literally all teachers use, all parents have access to, one system, not multiple systems.
Correct. Are it's we a weaning? Centralized web-based system.
Okay. So there are right now there are multiple systems in existence.
Yeah. SASE was a distributed type of database architecture.
Right.
And so this is one Sybase SQL
okay.
system that will reside on one server,
okay.
a large server. And we're going to phase in the parent access so that we'll start with the secondary sites during the upcoming school year, and then we'll add the elementaries as the gradebook components get implemented as well.
Okay.
And anyone else can jump in too in responding.
What with the PCs that are deemed obsolete, then those that are beyond the 4 to 5 year window, what happens to those?
Build up the numbers to the 3,000.
But they can't be our policy says they can't be connected to the network. Is that
they can be if they purchase new, if they are willing to pay a total cost of ownership surcharge so that we can hire additional staff or pay overtime to maintain the additional PCs that go beyond the numbers that are funded in the plan.
And the surplus is how much? Or how's that determined?
The surcharge, it's $100 per computer annually.
$100. And that allows then, essentially, you provide the service to then maintain that as long as they pay the fee to upgrade it.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So that comes out of the site funds. Okay. And then another question I had was about, just in general, our internet policy. What level of access do teachers have versus what level of access do students have?
Mm-hmm. Great question.
Yeah.
Yes, the students have a level of access that is in line with the acceptable use policy and board policy, and it's obviously more restricted because we have to keep in mind the federal law, the, can't think of what it's called right now, I'm blank, but I have the link on our website. So we need to follow the federal laws because we are a district that gets the E-rate discount through the Schools and Libraries Commission.
Right.
And so that's a requirement. And then the staff gets an elevated level of rights that gives them access to everything else that the administration has determined with staff input, input from our EdTech Steering Committee as well, and
And then do we have some sort of, I don't know what the proper term is, but some sort of partition that prevents access to, or I guess a better way to describe it, allows access to what is deemed appropriate for staff?
Yes, we have a filtering system
right.
that you can set those different levels of access. In addition to that, the system isn't always 100% accurate, as with all technology.
Right.
So teachers, staff, anyone can request a bypass of the system if they have a website that they know they need for students and it correlates with the curriculum and principal approval and all of that.
Right.
Then a work order can be submitted through their site tech coordinator and we can open that up.
But the teachers don't have just unrestricted access to do what they need to do for... There's some filtering system. Okay, just
Correct.
A couple more questions. And it just has to do with where we are against some of the benchmarks that were in the EdTech plan that was adopted by the board. Let's see. You want to get your copy? Okay. So if you turn, I don't see a page number, but goal 3G.1, increase access to student achievement benchmark A, it talks about the new student information system. I'm assuming we're talking about PowerSchool there.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And being adopted by August 31st, 2001.
Correct.
if you drop down to the next benchmark, 3H.1.
Yes.
Okay.
We need time for the Instructional Services, Ed Services Division to work with elementary sites and develop something district-wide.
Okay.
And we just felt like to try to get that all done with everything else, it wouldn't be a reasonable timeline to give folks the time they needed.
It just seemed like that. I didn't understand the issue that you're raising, but it seemed like that was one that could be accelerated. Same thing with the community liaison. I was curious where we are. Goal 3H.3, talk about appointing a district liaison by June 30th, 2008. Is that a budget issue, or why are we waiting, you know, until then?
It is a budget issue, and it's a position that hasn't been created yet.
Okay. So it's an issue that needs to be funded.
It hasn't even been developed or even approached. We haven't approached personnel yet, so that's something that the EdTech Steering Committee had proposed and that next year we can work on and perhaps
look at. That's all I have
for now.
I have some more questions. Thanks. Appreciate
those job responsibilities are being distributed amongst different people
amongst the
currently.
Crowd right now. Okay.
It's not a one position.
All right. Mr. Chairman. Oh, sorry.
Mine's really short. I think it's going to be so great for the teachers. We have that at Arroyo Grande High School, electronic grade book and access to all this and attendance. But I'm in an IEP meeting today and I can access a student's grade printout from the semester out of her classroom, or I can put grades in at home in the middle of the night. I can look up what I'm doing, writing up an IEP at night. I can access attendance records and all kinds of things from home to put these plans together. And you're so flexible.
They're definitely ready for that.
It's fantastic. When the parents have access, they don't have access to the ongoing grade book day to day, do they? Won't it be just the progress reports?
They'll have access to whatever the teachers enter into the system.
So it would be the day-to-day gradebook.
If they enter it day-to-day, then parents can see it.
Well, I mean, the gradebook is on the internet now. But
they can choose not to click upload or update. So they can go ahead and enter their grades.
That's another really nice thing about it. When you have to put your grades in for progress report, you just input them from your gradebook.
Right.
It's so great. And they make a few little adjustments. Really nice. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks for pointing that out.
And thank you for all that you do. You do a great job.
Thanks.
Okay. I just don't have any questions.
I'm scared to touch it. On goal 3D.3, excuse me, I'm sorry. The benchmark where it talks about a survey, June 30th, 2007. Will you be able to bring back results for us?
The student access to instructional media. I'm going to.
Amelia, thanks for all the information. I just had a couple questions.
You're welcome.
I was curious, as using an example where there's the maintenance of the websites.
Yes.
Has there been an opportunity to integrate student involvement in any of the upgrades and any of the program development?
The high schools have web design classes, and so those students are involved in updating their school websites at both Slo High and Morro Bay.
So the sites can integrate where feasible with the class?
Yes.
The continued
it's part of the instruction of the class, I believe. Okay. We have one of those teachers here.
Okay. And then the other... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Jan might want to elaborate, but I know your students, right, Jan, work on? They've done some updating.
That's great with all the investment, if they can participate also. The other question I had, is there a plan to begin an evaluation? I know you're not done with this sequence, but come next year, you're a year away from the completion of this. Is there going to be a plan or integration into what takes place at that point on beyond 2009?
Yes, every 3 years the state requires that the plan be updated. And so we usually take about a year to go through that process. The school year 08-09 we'll work on it, and then we'll bring it to you. And throughout that year, we also take the draft plan to the district's curriculum council, to the administration, principals, the ed tech steering committee, pulls in other input. And next time I'd like to get a little more student involvement as well, middle and high school students.
And then the last thing is, how much site-based allowance is there for different needs at different schools for PCs and additional support? How's that fit into the whole plan structure?
Well, we tried to write the plan so that it wasn't restrictive, so that it was written generally enough that if sites wanted to do some additional innovative things, that it could be incorporated into some of these goals and that we could still support it. So are you talking about support from a financial standpoint? Or?
Well, not only financial, but in terms of the flexibility?
Yes, we tried to make it as flexible as possible.
And you've seen that happen with the differing sites have requests?
Well, we've had our middle schools involved in the EETT grant now for almost three years. And so they're doing some innovative projects that aren't being done at other schools. They have quite a few smart boards and CPS units, and you know, we can elaborate on that another time, perhaps share a little bit more on the instructional side of the plan would be great in the future.
Thanks, Amelia.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Since we're moving from, a standalone to a web-based system, what assurances do we have for security of the information that's going to be placed there?
That was one of the great features that PowerSchool, the company, sold us on, was that they have a built-in encryption so that your passwords are encrypted when you log on to the system. And also we to be concerned about.
Yeah, just one more comment. And I think it's really a discussion issue for us as we go through the budgeting process over the next couple of months, not so much for the ed tech group specifically. But one of the frustrations I've heard from the sites is that they came from this world where they had lots of PCs, right, a few years ago, and they've seen a declining number of PCs. And the message is, well, you can keep them, but you got to take the money out of your site funds to pay for them. You know, you got to pay to upgrade them yourself, and then you have to pay a fee back to the district to have us maintain them for you as a service. And I think that's an issue that as we go through the budgeting process and prioritize, we really need to decide if we want to advocate for or commit additional funds out of our global budget to, you know, more computers on campus, or if we're going to say, no, you know, that's an issue that the principal themselves has to make discretionary decisions about with their site funds. So, you know, I've heard that from a couple of campuses anyway, that's a real concern of theirs.
Other questions from board members? Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Mrs. Chapman and then Mr. Bates.
Thanks,
you. Amelia.
You're welcome.
Fayla Chapman from Morro Bay High School. I was here in January to tell you about my frustration with the situation in the classrooms, and I want to tell you it hasn't changed a whole lot. When I was here in January, I had one working computer in my classroom. I do teach science. We used to have seven in each classroom. We now have one or two in four of the classrooms. And as of last week, I now have two working computers in my classroom. It took 6 months almost to get those two fully working in the classroom. Our site rep has not been there for three times. And when finally the guy came in to fix it last week, he was a substitute. He was there for 3.5 hours, and he worked between two or three classrooms trying to get them set up. And mine single one was the only one he was able to get functioning and hooked to the internet. I've also been frustrated because I have asked on four separate occasions to go past the restricted access. I've been allowed to do it twice. The other two, I was not allowed to go past the restricted access. I've also been frustrated in the last 2 months because we've been buying CDs for several, no, I shouldn't say that, several, 2 years that are tutoring programs. They are standalone CDs, and we went to purchase another one just last month, and it had to go up for review to to computer services. They have to decide still whether or not we will be allowed to buy this CD, and all we're going to do is just put it in our little CD player and use it as a tutoring program. It's not going to be loaded onto the computer or anything else, and we have not been given permission to buy it yet. So there are all kinds of frustrations of which we need them fairly soon, and that means we need the money somehow, and not from our site budgets. We can't afford this. So we need to have that money put in somewhere. Thank you.
Mrs. Chapman, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
The computers that you're talking about in your classroom that are not working right now, do you know if the school is paying the $100 per computer as a sort of licensing fee in order to assure them their operation?
I think these two that are in my classroom besides my teacher computer are within our site budget. They are not beyond the budget at this point. So they are within what's allowed us.
Okay, so you said you had four computers in your classroom?
Last year I had seven.
Working. Okay.
I started the year this year with one.
Right.
Okay, and that was my teacher computer.
Right.
Then they upgraded two of the 98s to XP. They've been brought in. They've now had CD drives put into them. One of them still does not work. The other one is fully functional. But those are part of our allotted system.
Part of your allotted system?
As far as
I
know.
So those are not above and beyond your allotted system, no. The $100 that Amelia was talking about?
I should.
Is that correct? Yeah. I'm just trying to get a picture for this.
They are part of our, within.
The ones you have are part of the TOC chart.
Yeah, okay. So they are part of the school allotment at this point, not above and beyond.
Not above and beyond, so we're not paying the extra $100 for those.
Oh, they are?
But you are paying the $100 for those.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs. Dickinson and Mr. Peter?
For you or for Amelia, do you have RO, or for the principal too, Mr. Zotovich, do you have an ROP computer repair class on campus? And do those kids help at all? I mean, are they good?
The kids came in and installed the CD drives into the computers, okay? Mm-hmm. Then they couldn't go beyond that because the computers had to be refaced or something to fit the network. Don't ask me. I don't know this stuff. So anyway, we had to have a technician come in to mm-hmm. actually do the extra work.
But up to a point.
Kids have done a great job.
Yeah, they're great. I'm glad you have that on campus. We have that, too. It's really great. A great program. Okay.
Yeah, I have another question, Mrs. Chapman. Can you, when you described four times when you needed to go beyond whatever the restricted access, can you explain what the process is for you as a teacher to get access to a website that the system restricts you from, and why you were restricted from the other two?
It's a simple system. If you try to go in, you'll get a little sign that says restricted access, and on that it says, if you want to go beyond this, type in your teacher name and your teacher number, your password, and then you do that, and if they're going to let you go in, they let you go in just that fast.
Right.
But on two of the times it came back and it said, you are still not allowed to go into these things. And I have to admit, all right, we were trying to buy prom decorations. But they would not let me get to the sites that would let me buy those prom decorations on the internet. So it was frustrating for
us. And this is some, Amelia, an automated system of some sort that, I don't know, has some algorithm that determines what's acceptable and what's not? Or?
It's part of our security program 3 years ago by the board for access.
Right.
And the access is designed not to be restrictive, to be honest with you. It's designed as part of our firewall and security devices. As we go into the PowerSchool components, One of the things that we feel good about is that Lightspeed is one of our layers of protection, because we won't have people accessing websites that could end up being used to backdoor our student information system, as an example. It's that restrictive. It's that good.
Do students have access to teacher systems, though?
No.
No?
They shouldn't have.
I do have to say, this is secondhand, some of us have to let the students into our restricted access because it's the only way we can do some of this material.
Yeah,
and but that's in opposition to the board policy.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question about that.
Just a real quick question. We didn't get any of our computers through some kind of grant that required all computers be accessible to students. No, that was just at Rio Grande High School. Because my computer, I understood, had to be accessible to students.
Do they have a separate login?
Well,
I use my login for the day, and they can use it.
Dave's point is the students can use the computer, they just can't use the teacher's login to access the web systems.
Then the other thing is, if we didn't have a board policy restricting something, I mean, manually, you can unrestrict any site, right? It can be done, even in spite of Lightspeed.
That's correct.
Right, okay.
Just to clarify, we have a procedure that if a teacher would like to access a site, they can make that request through their site tech coordinator, and it's reviewed, and the site is opened up. It might not be instantaneously, but within a day, they would be able to review the site and open it up. So it's a little bit of a delay, but we, as Russell said, we have Lightspeed, and that protects us, and if necessary, we open it up at the teacher's request. Yes.
Well, thanks, Vela.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Savage, would you like to come back up?
A couple of questions. First off, how are the computers and the servers purchased?
We have a contract that was out to bid, and we had a response, and we have a set price for those.
Okay, so you go out with a request for proposals?
Correct.
Okay. Next question is, have you gone out with a request for proposals for the maintenance and care of those?
We do our own internal maintenance on a general basis. We also have 3-year warranties on the PCs themselves, and I think 3 or 4 years on the servers and switches. So there's a warranty piece, and then we have our own internal employees who actually do the installation, the upgrades, the general maintenance pieces.
Okay, for that component, has there ever been a request for proposals to take care of that component?
We have our own employees for that.
I understand that. But my question is, has there ever been a request for proposals?
No.
To do that?
No.
Okay.
Come forward. We have wiped the hard drives and made them available to different nonprofit and churches and et cetera.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions on this item? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mr. Unger, quite frankly, most of the computers that are offered up for surplus go to both the ROP classes and are reused in the classes.
Could you state your name real quick? I'm sorry.
I'm Jan Fetcho. I'm the computer repair teacher at San Luis High. And the computers go to the ROP classes where they are used and reused and reused as teaching devices. And by the time we get done with them, they're really not much use for anything except to go to the recycler who recycles the components, and they're melted back down and made into new computers. So there are some that do get recycled to other places from the elementary schools, but from the high schools themselves, we pretty much reuse them till they're ready to go to the great computer place in the sky.
Well, and I would point out, I believe that at one of your open houses, you have a contest about dismantling and putting back together computers that I believe Mr. Jones and I participated in. I think we lost to the students, didn't we?
yeah, Probably. Or to
another set of Okay, shall we move on to item number 6, settlement agreement, Sunnyside lease with J.H. Edwards Company. Mr. Parker. Did I miss number 5? Oh, I'm sorry. I did miss number 5. Let's go on to number 5. This is regarding a board member's absence. Dr. Valentine, do you have anything to add about this? Okay, shall we entertain a motion? And
I'll make the motion. It's been pass it.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Spadafor, seconded by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Now we'll move on to item number 6. 5-0. Oh, man, I'm just losing it. Okay, 5-0 with one abstention. Did you get that, Mrs. Holmes? Good. Okay, thank you.
Good evening. As the board's aware, our master tenant at Sunnyside Elementary School defaulted on his lease payments. And since January, whenever he turned the property back over to the school district, we renegotiated the leases with current tenants and have been actively pursuing additional tenants. In our negotiations with the former tenant, Mr. Edwards, we have arrived at a proposed settlement agreement for past rent due as well as future rent. The past rent amount would be $100,000 for the months that he was in arrears until the time we took over the operation of the facility. And then future rent would be at a reduced rate. His obligation was $20,000 a month, and the proposed settlement would be $5,000 a month for the 13 future months. Rights and privileges to pursue remedy on this matter. And support of any questions?
Mr. Edwards' $20,000 rent is being reduced to $5,000, but his $20,000 rent included the rents that he received on the property. And so we're receiving rentals on the property directly, right?
That's correct.
So if we rented out the property, let's say fully rented out the property, I don't know what that would be. Right now we're about $7,000 a month in rent for that?
Yeah, property? We'll be about $7,500 in the next few months.
So if we, say, rented it out and we were able to get $20,000 a month, Mr. Edwards would still owe us for the balance of the $5,000 of the lease, lease obligation?
Whatever we're capable of renting the property for has no influence on this settlement. This settlement stands alone.
Very good.
And just for the board's interest, if you were to project what Mr. Edwards would have owed us had he continued to pay to the termination of his lease, that would have been $260,000, minus the $65,000 for future rent that he's signing a note against, and then minus $97,500 existing rent that we're collecting to the term of the lease, assuming we don't get another square foot rented, if we stay status quo. We will only be down $97,000 from where we would have been had he paid us in full for the entire term of the lease. Okay. Now, we are certainly hopeful of renting out more of the property than we currently have, in which case we would we at least have a chance to even make up that $97,000.
Okay. Mr. Spadafor and then Mrs. Roger.
Go ahead. I was just going to make a motion.
Hi, Brad. I was unclear when I read this item. My interpretation of what I read was that in addition to the adult school, the preschool, and special ed programs, we have leases for approximately 35%. Is that an indication that you have pursued and found new tenants?
We have not found any additional tenants that came to us from Mr. Edwards. But I have recently shown the property to two interested parties, and I'm hopeful that we'll begin to get some more interest.
Okay, thank you.
And I just wanted to mention that the district has an obligation to mitigate any damages under this situation, and that Mr. Parker and the administration has taken steps to do that. So even though there's a settlement with Mr. Edwards, the district goes forward with all efforts, as you had stated, to rent the location. And I make a motion to authorize a superintendent or his designee to enter into this agreement as set forth.
It's been moved by Mr. Spadafore and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Carries 6-0. Thank you very much, Mr. Parker. All right, let's move on to item number 7. Mr. Barnett, this is instructional materials adoption for a new course, European History Advanced Placement.
Correct, and this is just a discussion item for tonight. Normally, we bring all of the adopted.
And there's normally a process where textbooks go through a review and also are available to the public for review.
Correct. This
have we?
Yeah, this text is on review right now, and it'll be on review until the 17th of this month. And it's available at the district office in the Instructional Services Department. And so if you were to take action tonight, it would still be on review until that time, and we wouldn't purchase it until after that period of time.
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I would advise if there's a parental review period that no action be taken until the conclusion of it, so you could be the beneficiary of that.
Okay. All right, any other discussion? Any discussion? Okay. Let's move on then to item number 8, proposed revisions to board policy 6161.11, instruction, supplementary instructional materials. Dr. Matakovich.
Yes. In light of the board study session on academic freedom, the suggestion was made that we take a look at our policy regarding the use of supplementary instructional materials, particularly videos and films. Staff has reviewed the School Boards Association sample policy, and you have it included with this item. It, as presented, it reflects changes that provide the principal discretion in the teacher's use of supplementary materials. It also allows teachers the opportunity to choose supplementary materials that meet their curricular objectives. We ask that you discuss the proposed policy, and we're here to take your direction.
Is there some board discussion on this? Mrs. Dickinson.
I think this is a big improvement. I was curious what the teachers think about this, and I don't know if they've had a chance to look at it and if they like it. I thought I only had two little things. One is a tiny change. Just in the very bottom under films, videos, it says when a teacher desires to show a film, videos, just to take the S out. I mean, that's just a small little English edit. But the other one was up here under number 2, appropriate for students. Well, teachers shall carefully preview all supplementary instructional materials in order to ensure that in their professional judgment the materials are, and number 2 says appropriate for students' ages and maturity levels. Well, I guess I should read both of them. And the first one was directly related to the course of study in which they are being used. I only wanted to do one quick thing, and that is at the bottom it says, maybe I'll just read it. Supplementary instructional materials must also be consistent with criteria developed for the selection and evaluation of other instructional materials. The principal or designee has the discretion to evaluate supplementary materials. If the teacher and or the principal believes that the materials may be in conflict with district criteria, they shall confer. And I think it should just be a period there instead of saying before using them. Because just in the practice in the field, you know, the teacher is going to make the professional judgment based on the criteria and all the standards. And it may be after the fact that the principal hears after period 2 or something that didn't like what went on, and then they confer and make a decision. So just realistically, I think before using them doesn't really work there. And it covers it completely because the principal or designee has the discretion to evaluate. And if there's any disagreement, they shall confer, period. So I think that would be just more accurate, and it would cover it completely.
Dr. Valentine?
I guess as I'm reading that, there's a condition before that that says that if either the teacher or principal believes that the material is in conflict, that's what triggers conferring before they use it. If there isn't any assumption that it's inappropriate, then they would confer whenever they would confer.
Well, I'm just saying, if the teacher, of course the teacher won't think it's in conflict, or she wouldn't show it, or he wouldn't show it, it seems to me. But then the principal might hear about it or come in and see it and think that it is. So it may not necessarily be before, because when the teacher might be making a choice that it's very appropriate, and then there might be a difference of opinion, so then they would talk about it and come to some kind of conclusion.
Sorry. The way I read it, the responsibility lies with the teacher to say, hey, I'm not sure about this one. You know, what do you think,
okay,
Mr. and Mrs. Principal, and confer about the issue? I think before. I think discretion lies clearly with the teacher, the way I read it.
Okay.
But maybe I'm misunderstanding it.
Mr. Buckman? Okay. The only question I had about this is, and I'm assuming we're covered in the last sentence of the second to the last paragraph, all films must be appropriate for the curriculum and the students' ages. Just assurances that students wouldn't be shown films or videos that were inappropriate to their age based on the MPAA ratings. That's the RPG, you know, whatever.
The motion picture.
The motion picture, yeah, right. You know, I guess I would hope that people would have enough discretion, or that there would be a way to make sure that, for instance, an R-rated movie wasn't shown in the high school, without parent permission or something, because we wouldn't allow a child to be in a movie theater where a movie like that was being shown unless parents had provided permission for it. And I want to make sure that this states that kind of a thing, or that's understood. Same thing with PG. You know, would we show a PG movie to a fourth grade class without parent permission? I think there would be some parents that could be fairly upset about that if that happened.
I have a question about that. Is that listed out in some kind of different policy with those? So maybe we don't need that, but a lot of times teachers show a clip of something without showing an entire movie, because, but could you show, I mean, can you show a clip out of Romeo and Juliet, you know, but you don't show the, you know, or Shakespeare in Love or something without showing the whole movie, you know what I'm saying? You know, it seems like you could use educational parts of our movies that are not at all the R part of the movie.
Well, yeah, certainly, I mean, that's exactly right. I think what Mr. Buckman's talking about, the administrative regulations, because at least when I read the ratings, and I'm not a big reader of them, but they typically will tell you foul language or, you know, excessive violence or sex or something like that. That's fine, too. I just want to make sure that we're not giving carte blanche to showing movies that might be inappropriate for students' ages. I think the community would be up in arms about that, and rightfully so.
Help me understand if this is possibly covered under another board policy, but I think we're possibly limiting ourselves by referring to films and videos when there's podcasts and there's YouTube and there's the internet with live streaming. And I'm wondering if now is an appropriate time to be examining including those things in this board policy, unless they're covered somewhere else. I mean, a teacher could come in with an iPod and plug it in and show that just as well. And do we consider that a film and a video, or is that something else?
Yeah, that's really true.
But I was going to say, this deals with supplemental instructional material. That's the general area. Supplemental instructional material can encompass, I think, a lot of things beyond film and video. Right. And I think instead, when you consider showing a two-hour movie in a class, I don't know how many teachers stay 2 hours with their students to watch a full movie. So to review that standard, and the Movie Picture Association bases a lot of their ratings on economics, not content purely. So I think what this is saying, and I support it fully, I think it's saying that the teachers as professionals are capable of making decisions in terms of what would best suit the teaching method or what's in the classroom and what they want to achieve with the students. But the administration has a role, if there's a question that the teacher has, to say, I want to do this, let's look at it together. I don't think this district has a problem at this point in trusting the teachers with the ability to work with the administration where appropriate, but giving the teachers, as professionals they are, the flexibility to incorporate different supplemental teaching tools into their classroom. So I support this.
I'm going to support this too, but I am sensitive to what you're saying, Mark. In our own county, Atascadero, I believe it was earlier this week, is talking about using podcasting for some of their supplementary instructional materials. And I think we can go ahead and support this, but I think that might be something that we would want to look at as a district, is how do we support instructional materials above and beyond what this addresses. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I think, and we'll bring this back to the board for a second reading or as many readings as the board would choose. I think a fundamental question, though, is that when there is a disagreement between the community, a parent, regarding the appropriateness of a film, maybe it's an R-rated film, or if there's a disagreement between administration and teacher on the showing of a film, somebody has to have the discretion to make the final decision, and I can either reside with every classroom teacher, or it can reside with every principal, or it can reside with whatever. But I think that when we get to the end of the discussion, it should be clear that what happens if in a classroom somebody says, I think this is an R-rated movie that simply has the kind of instructional value that trumps the concerns that made it an R-rated movie to begin with, and if somebody says, I disagree with that for my child or I disagree with that for this school, who's going to make that decision?
And I suspect that, I think following along with what Mr. Buckman said, that that might be an appropriate administrative regulation, and that might be a better place to handle the specifics of the board policy. But I think what Mrs. Dickinson is talking about, certainly there would be parts of movies that would be appropriate or inappropriate to show to students in classes that would supplement the material.
I remember showing Othello, and since it was R, I just had the kids take home permission slips, and they had to say, this is exactly what it is, this is what's in it, you can watch it ahead of time because we're not showing it till next week, and if you don't get a permission slip, you don't see it, and just do alternative activity.
And again, I would just support something like that being more fully developed in an administrative regulation. Okay. Other discussion? Mr. Bedrigan?
Bruce Bedrigan, president of the Teachers Association. Just want to thank Central Administration for working on this. Want to thank the board for the support on this. We see it as a step in the right direction. One thing I would suggest to Central Administration is we still would have liked to have been asked or invited to confer on the wording. We think we could have helped with this. So we would like to be in on that discussion also. And I like Mrs. Dickinson's suggestion about getting parent permission. I think that's part of a teacher's good judgment, making sure that that is covered before he or she would show anything that might offend any of the students, to do the groundwork, lay the groundwork ahead of time. We have to remember, too, that there are some films, Shakespeare films, or Schindler's List is R-rated also, but I could see that being used in a history class where it would be very powerful, very effective. So, but we do see this as a step in the right direction. So I want to thank the board for their support. I want to thank Central Administration for hearing that call and putting this forward. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chris?
Yes.
Getting back to your suggestion, why don't we consider implementing a policy that says if you're going to show an R-rated film, as a teacher, you need to request permission from the parents, like you do in your school?
Yeah, I'm guessing I would just I would personally be comfortable having it be handled in an AR. And I think that protects the teachers as well, to have specific language to that, you know, a teacher inadvertently showing something that somebody would be upset about. I wouldn't want somebody to get in trouble for something like that.
Can I say something?
Yeah, sure.
But I think they should have an option to show a clip that they know is not, you know, that's out of an R movie without getting permission slips.
Yeah.
Show a little piece. And usually you don't show whole movies. It's very rare because we don't have enough time, really. But you show clips of things that relate, a scene or, you know, something.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need permission slips to show something that's in there.
All right, shall we move on? Dr. Valentine.
Sorry, I'm weighing in on this. I think any kind of expression of tolerance of certain kinds of movies is going to beg another question, I think, from administration that keeps getting back to who will make the decision. Because if a film is shown in a class and a significant number of parents say, I don't want my child to watch this, and therefore those children are excluded from class and excluded from instruction that day because of their disagreements, is there some level of that decline to participate in it that someone should step in on and say, I don't think the material is appropriate to begin with if we're looking at 5 members of the class, 10 members of the class, 15 members of the class. And again, all of that drives back. I don't think there is a definition as to what level of tolerance would be appropriate, but it does keep driving back that when the issue comes forward, who will have the say-so over whether it goes forward or whether it doesn't.
So, sir.
Jim Nett, teacher at Laguna Middle School. I would think the term professional judgment of those involved is already involved with what Mr. Valentine is stating, that if 5 students are only students in my class who are going to see a film professionally, I would think there's a problem here. I shouldn't be showing this film because if the majority of my students aren't in the room, I'm not succeeding at my job. So I would think that's inherent in the wording that's already put forth.
Thanks, Jim. Okay, shall we move on to item number 9, the approval of general waiver request, Education Code 51222, physical education for San Luis Obispo High School. Mr. Barnett.
Good evening. The topic of tonight's discussion is the renewal of a general waiver request for San Luis Obispo High School in the area of physical education. As I mentioned last time, Education Code requires that all students enrolled in physical education course 1 and course 2 attend that class for 400 minutes every 10 days. San Luis Obispo High School students attend physical education classes 2 trimesters or 24 weeks per year in grades 9 and 10. The physical education classes are an average of 70 minutes per day during the 2 trimesters, exceeding the criteria of 400 minutes every 10 days during that time period. 78% of San Luis Obispo High School staff voted to maintain the trimester system, and like all schools in the state of California that are on a trimester schedule, students have 1 trimester during the year that they are not enrolled in physical education. To address this, the physical education consultant from the State Department of Education advised the district to seek a renewal of the general waiver. It's important to note that from the state's perspective, awarding a waiver brings the school and the district into compliance. The state does not view the award of a waiver as a temporary reprieve while other solutions are explored. The waiver is the solution to the unforeseen conflict between Education Code and the trimester schedule. The waiver process comes with specific criteria that must be addressed, and these criteria, you have the full writing in your packet, but the topics of these criteria include proof that the physical education that is offered complies with federal and state regulations, the development of a professional development plan for physical educators, proof that students take at least 18 weeks of physical education, and you'll note that that number is really to accommodate even those schools that complete a whole year's class in one semester. There are schools that do that as well, so that's even a shorter amount of time than we have at the trimester system, and they make accommodations for that. Development of a plan to monitor students' maintenance of a personal physical activity program. Assurance that the physical education program is in compliance with Title V, and insurance that all students will be prepared for and tested as specified in Education Code. And the last criteria is evidence that the school explored other schedule options. All of these 7 criteria have been addressed, and you have that in your packet. But of these seven criteria, the monitoring plan is probably the one that's worth exploring a little bit further here, as it's the newest to the district. I'd stress at this point that it's a process that we're working out, and I'm working closely with the administration at San Luis High, as well as the physical education teachers and the counselors, to work out this system. And at this point, we have it broken down as follows. Students will learn how to develop this personal fitness plan in the eighth grade as part of their standards-based course, and this is actually one of the standards that's laid out in the physical education documentation, so it's something that they would already be doing. Students will use those same skills to extend their plan to cover a semester or trimester time period. Students will then submit their personal fitness plans as part of their high school registration materials. And then beginning in the fall of the next year, the student that is not enrolled in physical education, the counselor will meet with the student and return and review the personal fitness plan with the student. Prior to these meetings, our partners at Cal Poly are planning to provide a training for the counselors on how to advise students about their personal fitness goals. The student will modify the personal fitness plan if desired, and the student will begin to implement the personal fitness plan. The student will submit 2 to 3 progress updates to their counselor on how the implementation of the personal fitness plan is going. At the end of the trimester, the parent or guardian will sign that the student has completed the personal fitness plan. Signed personal fitness plans will be submitted to the counselor and kept on file, and at the end of the year, the principal will use filed personal fitness plans to compile participation rates and completion data. San Luis High School is aware that there's a concern about the counselor's workload with this process, as well as their ability to evaluate suitable plans. This concern was also raised by the SLCTA Executive Board, and I'm thankful that they did, as I hopefully can allay some of their concern here. First, if the incoming freshman class is approximately 400 students, only 130 of those students would not be enrolled in PE on any given trimester. And as there are 4 counselors at SLO High School, those 130 students would be divided among the counselors, giving each counselor approximately 33 students each trimester that would need to be monitored. Because the students will still have the option to take athletics during their off trimester and have that class count for their personal fitness plan, those students will be fairly easy for the counselor to monitor. And this leaves a manageable amount of students each trimester that won't be in PE or enrolled in athletics. And I should point out here that in working with the administration and the counselors at SLO High, every effort will be made to schedule students to have their off trimester to coincide with the sport that they wish to participate in, so that they can take an athletics course if that's available to them in that sport. Check-in dates will be established in which students will be report in writing their progress on implementing their personal fitness plans. Counselors will need to check in with those students who have not checked in, who have not submitted an update on how that's going. So it is conceivable that if no student in any trimester that a counselor was responsible were to do that, they would have to follow up with 20 to 30 students, those students who are not enrolled in PE or athletics. But we don't anticipate that all students on a given trimester will not check in. And in fact, it may only be a handful of students that actually require face-to-face follow-up in any given trimester. And additionally, as I mentioned, training will be provided to the counselors on how to help students with their plans. Also, it should be said that 2/3 of the students at the beginning of the year will be enrolled in course one in that first trimester, and that curriculum calls for students to review the plan they created and then extend it. So for the majority of the incoming freshmen, their plan will be reviewed and revised in their PE class with their PE teacher before they begin their off trimester. It's also important to mention that the monitoring plan should not be seen as a replacement for physical education. Neither the state nor the site feel that a student's completing a personal fitness plan on their own replaces the learning that takes place while under the instruction of our expert physical education staff. The state representative that advised us to seek a renewal of the waiver was very clear on this point. Rather than a PE replacement, this experience of developing and executing a personal fitness plan is a student's chance to demonstrate the standards that they've learned in their physical education course. And this is exactly the behavior we hope our students will exhibit when they are no longer required to take physical education. It should also be noted that this process is new for the district, and the process will need to be carefully monitored and evaluated. And undoubtedly, as feedback comes in from students, parents, counselors, and physical educators, adjustments will need to be made. We will gather that feedback through counselors meeting physical education professional development time and anecdotally as shared by students and their families. The site is seeking the board's support of this waiver, and it supports the choice made by the teachers of San Luis Obispo High School. And I'd like to close just by bringing your attention to the final letter in your packet, the one that was added today. It's a letter from the California Department of Education confirming that the district is in compliance in all areas of physical education other than the item addressed by this waiver. And I'd like to thank all of our physical educators who have worked hard to take our PE program to the next level to make that possible.
I know there are a lot. There are folks here who would like to address this item from the public. So if you'd like to, please come on up. You have 3 minutes.
Hello, my name is Doug Morrow. I teach at Laguna Middle School, and I have so for 20 years in physical education. I have my notes, but I'd like to address what Mr. Barnett has brought up. He mentioned criteria, minute-wise. We are not in compliance, and that's why we need the waiver to make us in compliance. Having 70 minutes each day added up does not equal what the state ed code says is any 10 days you have 400 minutes. So that's why we need the waiver to Band-Aid approach physical education, in my opinion. Personal fitness plan. He's mentioned that the eighth grade is coming up. I teach eighth grade. Eighth grade is coming up with a plan. This is a brand new standard just adopted this year by this board. We have not made that plan yet. Okay? It is trying to be forced on us to get it done by the end of this year, which I find in my staff find very hard to do. Okay? So if we do get a program together, it will not be the best. I apologize for that. The time is too short for us to put a quality program together in less than 1 year because we just started meeting on this year. He mentioned that some of the students take athletics, and that's supposed to be PE credit. Athletics and PE does not coincide. Where are the standards that are based for athletics and PE? Check out the standards for physical education in ninth grade, course one and course two. Physically, they might do it. There is more than physical standards based in those courses. The waiver only addresses the physical aspects outside of school with those 12 weeks they'll be missing. They don't address all the standards. Back to mine. He also mentioned the solution is the waiver. Solution is not the waiver. Solution is education, getting the kids involved with physical education, with quality physical educators. This district has shown a lack of support for physical education. We've cut funding K through 3 for physical educators, putting it on the normal teacher to come out and learn our positions to teach. That's been cut. Fourth through sixth grade, we have combo classes of fourth, fifth, and sixth graders in a class of 70. They have different standards. They have different outcomes. Imagine you're teaching math, and they need to know adding before they get the multiplying and so forth. There are standards that aren't being met and pushed through. Middle schools have high numbers of students, and, of course, you know the high school has now been cut to a two-thirds program from a full year. Which brings up a point. What happened in those sections when we went to a trimester? Who was speaking out for physical education when those sections were cut back to a two-thirds program from a full year? Where did they go? When you do the waiver and those 12 weeks are gone, I'm really worried about the students who aren't involved in physical education. The most at risk will be the low economic social group that can't afford to go to a fitness club. How are they going to keep themselves fit? Push-ups, sit-ups, maybe. We've got facilities at the high school meant to keep them in shape. It's not being used because they're out. Parents watching. Hopefully it happens. I don't think it will.
And I'm going to have to ask you to start to wrap up.
Here's my wrap-up.
Great.
Imagine this. I run over and I tag Mr. Dr. Valentine. I say, "You're it." He turns to Mary Matakovich. She's getting out of her chair, and he reaches over and tags her. Mary looks around by now, Mr. Peter's up and gone. He's quit. He's out of there. Mary looks around. Oh, Dr. Valentine's still sitting in his chair. He tags him. Dr. Valentine's very smart. He says, no tag backs. He's off and running. Everyone's up and moving. Imagine what their faces look like. They're smiling. They're laughing. They're having fun. That's physical education. It isn't throwing a touchdown. It isn't shooting a three-point shot at the end of the game. It's the love of movement and how it brings us together. That is what this age needs the most. You've all had kids, high school age. They're too cool to be active, too cool to move moving. We need to get them back and moving. A small portion do go to athletics. How many football players are playing at my age? You need to be active.
Thank you
we
very much.
We all need to be active.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you want to ask the speaker a question?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I'm Will Jones. I'm the principal at San Luis Obispo High School. And I'm going to make some comments here, read actually the memo that I submitted to you before this meeting, and having to do with my concerns about the vote by the executive board to oppose the PE waiver. I want to make it really clear before I begin my comments from the memo that these comments are strictly related to the situation at San Luis Obispo High School and our trimester schedule. They in no way are meant to show any lack of appreciation for the work that our physical education teachers do or for the value of physical education, strictly related to the circumstances at our school and the decisions that have been made by our staff over time regarding the trimester and all of the courses, all the subjects that are affected by that schedule. So reading from my memo to share with the public, as the principal and instructional leader for San Luis Obispo High School, I am deeply disappointed by the San Luis Coastal Teacher Association's executive board decision to oppose the physical education waiver for many reasons, but I will limit my comments to four of those reasons. Number one, the decision is not in the best interest of students. Should the California Department of Education mandate three trimesters of physical education at San Luis Obispo High School, students will lose the opportunity to take elective classes in other academic areas, and that's one of the reasons why we adopted the trimester schedule in the first place and why it's been so fully supported by staff and by parents and by students for 8 out of the last 9 years. The decision is not in the best interest of teachers. Adding a third trimester of PE at the 9th and 10th grade level would wipe out 40 elective sections in other academic areas, resulting in layoffs or reduced assignments for teachers who teach those classes. Number three, the decision does not represent the will of the San Luis Coastal Teacher Association members at San Luis Obispo High School or throughout the district. In our annual schedule vote, which is conducted due to contract language negotiated by the union, 78% of the staff voted in favor of the trimester with full awareness that it involved a PE waiver. No other vote regarding the PE waiver at San Luis Obispo High School was conducted among rank-and-file members of the union. The executive board never attended or asked to attend a San Luis Obispo High School management team meeting to discuss the waiver. How can the executive board ignore the vote at San Luis Obispo High School and claim to speak for the association without conducting a vote of its full membership? Four, a physical education waiver is an option provided by the state for schools on non-traditional schedules, and that includes schools on block schedules as well, not just trimesters. It is completely legal, and schools on waivers are in complete compliance with state regulations. Nothing in the waiver process requires a school or a district to pursue alternative schedules in order to be in compliance. The waiver is not a temporary solution. As the executive board states, it is the solution. The decision of the executive board could ultimately have a profoundly negative impact on the students and staff at San Luis Obispo High School. It does not represent the will of the union membership at San Luis Obispo High School or of the school community. I hope the school board's decision regarding the waiver is not unduly influenced by the executive board's judgment on this matter. I am asking for your support of the waiver and of the students and staff at San Luis Obispo High School. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to address the board on this matter? Jan?
J.
Jan Fetcho. I'm a San Luis Obispo High School teacher. Just as a full year of algebra is taught in two trimesters, and a full year of AP computer science is taught in two trimesters, and a full year of computer repair is taught in two trimesters, a full year of PE is taught in two trimesters. I ask that you would support the vote of the teachers of San Luis Obispo High School and grant us your support for this waiver. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Ellen Sheffer, and I'm the chair of the management team for San Luis Obispo High School, and I'm here in that capacity this evening. As you know, the management team is responsible for recommending a schedule to the union, to the faculty, to the staff at the high school. We take this task quite seriously, and this year a great deal of time was spent discussing and debating the PE waiver. In fact, it was the only issue discussed with regard to the schedule. As my responsibilities as chair, I researched the waiver process in the education code and spoke with people in Sacramento about it in order to clarify what the waiver means, how it works, and the impact it has, what it means to our school. I contacted other schools that use the PE waiver effectively. I got the names of the schools on my own from internet research. I met with administration in order to learn about the history of how San Luis High has used the waiver process in the past and the procedure for applying for the waiver. I reported all of my findings to management team. Throughout my own research, we continued to debate the topic at management team meetings. In the fall, I attended a TCT time where Brian Miller, a teacher at the high school who is also on management team, and I spoke about the vote on the schedule and how three trimesters of PE would impact the trimester schedule. We continued to debate the waiver at management team meetings. In addition, Ed Valentine, Mary Matakovich, and Damian Barnett came to a management team meeting to answer questions about the waiver and to clarify things for us. After all this, we voted to recommend the trimester with the PE waiver. Next, the faculty and staff at San Luis High voted by a 78% majority, as Will Jones stated, to retain the trimester schedule with the PE waiver. I would like to point out that of the 22% who did not vote in favor of the trimester schedule, most did not vote against it because of the PE waiver, but for other reasons. I would like to further point out that this vote represented the greatest percentage ever for approval of the trimester schedule at the high school. A counselor from the high school is on management team, so she was part of the discussion at length about the waiver and the impact that this would have on the counseling staff at the high school. The waiver has been the single most discussed topic at management team meetings this year. The executive board's choice to ignore the expressed desires of its members is surprising. It displays that the wishes of the members are being ignored and discounted. This is an issue that impacts just San Luis Obispo High School in our district. We have repeatedly clarified the issues, and the clarifications seem to be falling on deaf ears. I would say that although I am not a CTA member, I'm a public member of the management team, I have been a high school teacher and university level instructor in the past and have belonged to academic and teacher unions. And just on the final personal note, I have never experienced having an executive board vote against the expressed will of its members. I would ask that the board approve the waiver. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Mr. Boyle.
Thank you. I'll try and stand up straight, Russ, if I can. I'm an elementary school teacher and don't really have a good handle on secondary programming. What the executive board was asked to respond to was a PE waiver, and if being out of compliance with state ed code was an okay thing for us to do. In looking at what the governors had to say about physical fitness and education, what we read in the newspaper, what we see in the media regarding obesity, increase in diabetes, et cetera. That was the backdrop in which we responded to the waiver request. We also looked at the waiver request from 2 years ago, where the association looked at the issue then, voted to have a neutral position, allowing the site to determine how they wanted to deal with that particular issue and reach some resolution and a solution to it. In that intervening two-year period that I'm aware of, no particular action has been taken. The particular vote this time said, in more detail, here are some concerns that we still have that if the waiver is passed by the board, which is your option, you have an additional 2 years to deal with, to look at, to examine. It's our position or my position and thought that there are a lot of bright people at San Luis High School that can, in fact, look at the needs of PE, their elective schedule, their staffing, and they can put together a schedule within the trimester system that makes it work. But they do have to look at it. What I understand to be the case is that largely management team and administration have been the only parties that have looked at the waiver process without really investigating possible options and alternatives that could be built into that schedule. It's my feeling that regardless of what you do with a waiver, that the staff ought to fully be looking at options, not only for PE, but any other consideration that comes up. It's not a small closed group that should be dealing with school-wide interests. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boyle. Thank you, sir.
Excuse me. You're welcome.
Marlene?
Hello, I'm Marlene Mendes, and I teach at San Luis Obispo High School, the school in question, and I teach PE there, and I have for many years. I've also taught in two other districts before I came to this district. I would take grave concern with the fact that the answer to this, or the solution to the problem, is to take education away from our students. Most school districts try to get as much education for their students as they possibly can, whether it's math, whether it's history, whether it's PE. We need to give them the education, not say that the solution is to take it away. Our standards are based in PE are based on 4 years of physical education. Now there's a waiver that the district has so that they only have to have 2 years. Now our school has decided that they only need a year and a half. I think 2 years should be enough of the PE students making a program work. So I would like to encourage you to, again, go to the state yourself and get the facts. I would also encourage you to please read the article in Newsweek and any other websites that were sent to you regarding the hard data on physical education and how it affects students in classroom situation, as well as the physical aspects of it and benefits of it. And I would also like to ask you to please do some research on this before you make your final decision. I don't feel confident that everything that you've heard is valid, and I would hope that you would look into it yourself. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bedrigan.
Bruce Bedrigan, Association President. The association has looked at this matter. We've discussed it several times. We've had emergency board meetings, executive board meetings. We invited site reps, PE teachers. We've talked to several PE teachers throughout the district. The consensus is that, yes, students need physical education every day. And as far as the meetings go, our association meetings are always open. So anybody and any member is always welcome to come and address the executive board or the site rep council. And Ed and Mary and Damian came and they spoke. They presented their perspectives, their views on the waiver, They listen to our perspectives and our views on the waiver and listen to PE teachers and listen to a lot of different concerns. And that open dialogue, I think, was beneficial. We simply don't agree on this issue. And the association's responsibility is to go ahead and look out for the best interests of students and all teachers, not just some select teachers. And so in doing so, we've come to this conclusion. We think our reasons are valid. One thing that we do wonder about is why aren't we offering alternate schedules? We think the trimester schedule is fine. We don't have a problem with the trimester schedule, and if that's what the teachers vote for, then that's what they should go ahead and get. But if the vote was trimester, when the vote is trimester or 5-6, nobody wants to go back to that 5-6. So what we have some creative teachers out there who are working on coming up with creative schedules that I think a lot of teachers would enjoy and benefit from and solve the problems we're facing right now. But right now, central admin is not letting us go ahead and not letting teachers vote on those schedules. So as long as that is one question we would ask is, why not the trimester be the fallback schedule? Why not that be the default? And then let the creative schedules come up, and then let teachers look at the two or three other schedules and let them vote on that. Then I'd like to see if the trimester would get a 78% vote. We just want a democratic process, and we want teachers to have more choice on this. We think there's solutions. We don't want elective teachers to lose their jobs. No, that's not our goal at all. We think there's some middle ground here where elective teachers can keep their jobs. Yes, and we can also have a PE that has continuity. We've had interesting proposals where we might split the credits, and it might be 2.5, and offset that with every other day or alternating block where you could have a PE one and back it up to an elective. There's a lot of possibilities out there, but until we explore those possibilities, we're going to be out of compliance, and we're going to have to get a waiver, and I think we're better than that.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Okay. I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Does anybody have any discussion on this? Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, just I guess I was a little bit perplex, Bruce, about the notion of central administration not allowing San Luis Obispo High School to explore schedule options. I'd be interested to take that question and share it with Bruce and the staff at San Luis Obispo High School to see if perhaps they could share their impression about whether they have the freedom to vote on a schedule or not. I don't understand where that comment came from.
Well, I am going to support the waiver. I do have some concerns, though, about the monitoring plan. I think I'm willing to let it go, but I want to know how it's going because I personally believe PE is very important for students, and I believe physical fitness is important for students K through 12. In fact, one of my great disappointments is that kids in 11th and 12th grade don't do PE, but I understand about electives as well. So I would like to continue to see us monitor the fitness plans, and I want to make sure that does work, and I want to make sure that the counselors aren't overburdened by that. The other thing is I would be interested in looking at alternatives to providing everyday PE for students that wouldn't cost them other electives, because that is a concern I have. It's a concern I've had since 2000 when we talked about adding the computer requirement as part of the graduation requirement. Every time we mandate a graduation requirement or another requirement, it's something that students that reduces the choices that students have. That said, though, I am going to go ahead and support the waiver. Anybody else? Mrs. Dickinson, then Mr. Peter.
I think this is a very, very tough question. And I still don't know exactly how I'm going to vote because
I like supporting, listening to teachers, and you know, the fact that so many San Luis Obispo High School teachers feel this way is a significant thing. On the other hand, I don't agree that, I agree that you can do algebra in two trimesters and some other courses, but you cannot do PE in two trimesters, nor can you do choir, for instance, or band. Certain courses cannot be covered in two trimesters. They're just qualitatively and totally different kinds of endeavors. So I would be most in favor of the school figuring out by next fall how to have PE and music, and maybe there's other courses too that I'm not thinking of right now, every day all year, and still have you know, some kind of creative thing like that. Mr. Jones, I love you, Mr. Jones. You got your mouth open. By the way, we all love each other in this district. You know, even though we have these conflicts, you know, I mean, I remember my kids coming home and raving about Mr. Jones teaching English and how he could cry in class. Well, now he's crying because of my comments. you know, and some of the, I read the emails from the teachers, and there's comments of like, you know, we have all these good job training programs that we teach, and we've got to make sure kids have job skills. And, you know, we do. We want kids to have it all. But they're not going to have it all in high school. They're going to have to do some job training after high school. And they're going to, I mean, I was an art major in college. I never took an art class in high school. They're going to get into new fields and develop themselves their whole lives. But their health and fitness needs to be, you know, maintained through their youth. That's not something that you can just throw away. And music is in this category, too. Some things are harder to pick up and get back if they're neglected during the time you're growing up. And we have a responsibility to make sure, you know, that the students are healthy enough to find out those new endeavors and find that new training and expand their horizons after high school. So I think that PE every day is important. So I still don't know what I'm going to do about that, but I think it is.
I got to tell you, this has been a tough one for me, too. I don't know. I think I've struggled more with this over the last few weeks thinking about it than many of the other issues we faced, you know, since I've been on the board since last summer. First, I want to thank Mr. Morrow for taking the time to meet with me and for sending all of us information. I think he provided a lot of great background information. We could probably stack mounds of data on the tables here that speak to the benefits of daily exercise and the benefits it has for students and for learning and all of that. I don't think that's even a debatable issue. I think the fundamental issue for me here is reconciling what is a very popular trimester system supported by teachers, supported by students, with, you know, what we believe a student should be doing on a daily basis. And I think all of us would agree that more exercise would be good. We could probably also argue that more French would be good or more career tech ed classes would be good. And we could probably have a lot of advocates for those other programs up here as well. And so that's one sort of point. One thing I wanted to do was to analyze the data to see how much PE the kids at San Luis actually do get. You know, my initial thinking was, well, shoot, I asked the question, I think, when the issue came up last year. We weren't voting on it. But do the kids at San Luis Obispo High School actually get as much PE as the kids at Morro Bay High School, for example? The answer is, actually, they get quite a bit more PE during those two trimesters in terms of minutes. And I know this issue is not about minutes. I really believe that, because we could probably cram all of our PE into a four-week period, and if you sit on the couch for the rest of the 11 months of the year, it's not going to do you any good at all. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. I thought it was an interesting data point. It was on the news a couple of months ago that kids tend to put on weight during the summer when they should be out active having a lot of fun. More weight during the summer than they do during the school year. So I think there's a link and a benefit to what the kids are learning and studying and doing while they're in school. But I'm not going to pass these charts out because I don't want people to get the wrong impression. But the state ed code does say that 400 minutes every 10 days is what the requirement is. The waiver criteria says that you need to be within 12.5% of that either way, either below or above in terms of the minutes you deliver every 10 weeks. So that's 90 minutes daily for an 18-week period. The slow waiver, our commitment is 80 to 90 minutes, and what that all adds up to is that the kids at San Luis High actually get, during those periods, about 16.5% more minutes of physical education during those two trimesters than kids do during a year at Morovay High School. And again, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm glad that they're getting that attention when they're there, but I personally would feel better if those kids were getting a year-round program of some sort. My other concerns are about the making sure that we stick to the plan. If we ultimately do vote to support this waiver, that we stick to the monitoring plan and that it be a rigorous plan. I was concerned about not only the workload for the counselors, but their qualifications to maintain, a program like that when they don't necessarily have the background or expertise in that area. And I'd really like to make sure that we monitor that plan closely and that there are rigorous requirements and that we as a board come back to that issue and check on it periodically to make sure that we understand how this process is going. And then the other question I had was for Damian. You talked about one of the requirements for the waiver was the schedule. Or that other schedule options be investigated. And can you just tell us about what other options were investigated and what that process was like?
Actually, either Dr. Matakovich or Will Jones should speak to that. This is a renewal of the waiver, so that piece of criteria was covered when they initially applied for a waiver. They needed to demonstrate those things. And I know that in coming to the trimester system, and just talk about the history of how you got there and other schedules that were looked at.
Well, I don't think you want me to talk about the entire history of how we came to the trimester system, but I can say that within our system, as is also within the contract, that at any time a teacher can come forward or a group of teachers can come forward with a suggestion for an alternative schedule to the trimester. We do have a process in place where, of course, to make a shift to a new schedule would take time to bring everybody up to speed on what that schedule is all about and get support from the school community. But our management team process allows for new schedules to be presented. In fact, we recently had alternative schedule presented by one of our physical education teachers, Jim Thompson. And the management team liked the schedule, said, why don't you present that to the entire staff? He presented that to the entire staff. At this point, I don't know if it has kind of taken root among the staff as an alternative to the trimester, but it was presented. And what happens then is that when the December rolls around or November of each year, then the management team has to make a recommendation on a schedule. If over a period of time it's become clear to the management team that an alternative schedule presented by a teacher or teachers looks like a good alternative to the trimester, then we vote. We make a recommendation. If the management team says we're going to go with Schedule A, we're going to recommend Schedule A rather than the trimester, then that goes to the entire staff to either accept the recommendation or reject it. As it stands right now, if they accept the recommendation, then we either change to Schedule A, or if it's the trimester that's recommended, we stay on that. If the management team recommendation is rejected by the staff vote, within the contract right now, we default to a 5-6 schedule. I think that's what Bruce Bedrigian was referring to, concern that the default to the 5-6 is kind of creates a fearful proposition for teachers. They don't want to go there. If there was some alternative to defaulting to the 5-6, let's say the default schedule would then be the trimester, maybe it would be easier to get support for an alternative schedule. So that process is in place. It's always in place. And so over the course of the last 2 years, how many different schedules have been presented? The only one that I know that has formally gone through that process where it went through the management team completely, was explained to the team and then passed on to the staff for its consideration was the recent schedule that was brought forward by Jim Thompson.
How does the schedule become the default schedule then? The trimester one, for example.
Well, that would have to be through negotiations.
Okay. It's in the contract. Okay. Let me just take a quick look at my notes and see if I have any other... I think that's it for now. Go ahead, Ed.
I think, as everybody has said, this is a complicated situation. It's not something that has a very easy answer, because I think it involves a lot of different concerns. I think physical education is incredibly important because it deals with a lifestyle change, possibly, that there's a crisis for young adults because of some of the health problems that have been developed, the problems with diabetes, even with heart disease with children who are 11 and 12 years old. One thing I'm worried about here, and I wanted to ask Damien a question initially, I think we have a deadline of April 3rd.
No, this item will come back on the 24th for you to take action, and okay. And April 30th is our deadline.
April 30th. I just wanted to make sure what date the deadline was. Okay. Yes. And one of the things I'm concerned about is that, in any sense, physical education is marginalized, where the sense is that it can take a back seat or it can always be placed in a subsidiary position because change isn't evaluated. And I appreciate Will's comments about the process to look at alternatives. And I appreciate what Bruce had mentioned with regarding options. Because I think the one thing as a school board that we should never do is say that we don't have choices or we don't have other paths we can follow because it's either going to be A or it's going to be B. I really feel that one of the messages here, and I never would want to see this happen in our school district, is that physical education is marginalized, that it's not important for kids to have a lifestyle change that's presented to them that hopefully they'll take with them for the rest of their existence, because I think that's critical. And I think in this country, that has been the message. If you're not an athlete, physical education is not so important. And I think that stratifies students in high school especially, where students who are athletes are seen on a different level than students who aren't athletes. And I think physical education is important because even if you don't star on a team, you can feel better about yourself, you can participate in a team activity. And that's what I think we shouldn't forget here. So what I'm going to say is I think at this point in time, because there have not been other alternatives that we can do besides the waiver, is I would recommend that we approve the waiver, but we bring this back next year, April of 2008, and we explore other alternatives that possibly don't marginalize physical education, that we ask San Luis High School to consider Mr. Thompson's approach to this and what he's discussing, and that we look at other alternatives, including scheduled departure, including students that are leaving for free time because their units are up, and including what the counselors have found in terms of how able they are to monitor what the students are doing. I don't think this is an issue of a structural impasse. I think this is an issue as to how we can approach this so the students can benefit from something that's critical for them for the rest of their lives. So my recommendation would be to eventually, when this comes up again, to approve it. But I'd like to see it come back in 1 year's time and explore those items to find out if there's something better we can do. Thanks.
I think this is a discussion item. Any other discussion on this? Okay, great. Thank you. We'll move on to item number 10 then, strategic plan budget development. Dr. Valentine.
Good evening, and thank you. I've taken the stage one of our presentation tonight on the strategic plan, and what I wanted to do is frame for you the current information we have about our budget for 2007 and 2008. I want to emphasize that what you're seeing here tonight is so preliminary that it can't even be considered constructive in its concept. Is that pretty good? Okay. You like that, Adrian? That's wordsmithing at its best.
You've been talking to the lawyers too much.
Yeah, I've been in a lot of lawyers' meetings lately. But the whole concept is for us not to get too tied up in the budget numbers at this point, but that the strategic plan has value in terms of its recommendations. And what we have this year so far is that we have an expectation that our revenue will be at a reduced rate of increase as it has been in the past several years. We are looking at a prognostication from the county auditor's office that our property tax revenues will be in the 5 to 7% range at best. And in the past years, it's been as high as 11-12%. In addition to that, there's some, the unitary tax is the one that's got us buffaloed at the moment, and that's the Diablo Canyon and the Morro Bay Power Plant. In particular, Morro Bay has filed for a return. I want to get this right, but I'm not sure it's absolutely correct. One year they were in the local property tax base, and then the next year they were in the statewide unitary pool. When they do that, they are assessed differently. If you're in the statewide unitary pool, the State Board of Equalization assesses your property for tax purposes. If you're in the local tax base, the local tax assessor assesses you. When the power plant changed hands, I believe they went to the local tax basin, and now they're in the unitary, and as a consequence, I know this one, their value has been reduced 12.8%. That represents $12.8 million in value from the assessed rolls that has been lost. That will translate for us about $125,000, $150,000 worth of property taxes. We're uncertain what happens with Diablo. Having said all of that, what we do know is that our unitary taxes will be about $9.2 million. Our residential secured will be about $42 million. Our unsecured, $1.1 million, and the homeowner exempt, $403 million. Total revenue, $52,643,000. Before I go further, emphasize unrestricted revenues. None of this is categorical or restricted. We have no clue what the state of California is going to do in terms of its allocations from Prop 98. Right now, yes, ma'am. Dim the lights? I know. There was a hum from the projector that was getting me. I can't hear. Thank you. Except for, you know, I had a miracle. When he blew out the sound system, my ears improved. I don't know what it was. It was something. We'll get Bob to fix that. Thank you. Okay. Is that better? Very good. This is unrestricted revenue, and it has no restricted. We don't know what the categoricals are. Legislative Analyst Office has predicted that we will be over-allocated in Proposition 98 money from the state of California, presenting us with a dilemma, not us, actually, the governor, and what he's going to do. Is he going to allow us to be over-appropriated, or is he going to take some money back and under-allocate us so that it matches? And almost certainly that comes from categorical monies. So we'll see what he ends up doing. Going quickly through the other revenue, $2 million, and then we've listed the encroachments on the general fund. And encroachment is not a bad word. It really should be changed, but it's been in usage for so long that we know what it is. The encroachments really mean general fund support for critical programs. And what we have is special ed, $3 million, class size reduction, the primary K-3, general fund supports to the tune of $1 million. Transportation home to school is supported almost $1.4 million, and the school safe is $44,000. We also do the 3% transfer to restricted maintenance, $2.2 million, leaving us a net total unrestricted revenue, $46 million. We have projected with the recent pay increase that was negotiated with the teachers will go into effect next year, 3.6%. That's what the certificated salaries, which are paid with unrestricted dollars, will look like. Same with classified salary increases. We have just received information that our health benefits will increase 12 to 16% next year because we have a cap, and everything over the cap is split 50-50. The employees and the district's portions will be shared accordingly at about a 6% rate, depending on what plan you have. Materials and supplies, operations and others, total outgo, total expenditures of unrestricted revenues at this moment is $46.8 million, leaving us with a balanced budget. Okay, that frames for you the next piece of the discussion, which is the strategic planning process and the prioritization of should there be more money, should this become more defined for us, where does the board's interest lie in placing resources at the disposal of the priorities that Dr. Valentine will now talk about. Any quick questions? Excellent. Dave. All other places?
Yeah, but
no. Kathy, give us an example.
Lottery donations.
Rent. Interest, rent. Yes, rent. Okay. Thank you all.
Continuing, appreciate the opportunity tonight. We're really beginning the launch of our strategic planning budget conversation. And as such, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of share with the board some of the background, I think, that may be useful for beginning the conversation tonight and continuing the conversation into the future. The board will recall that we spent considerable time focused on the concept of strategic planning within San Luis Coastal. And the concept basically indicates that we have a certain amount of resources. We have an extraordinary amount of needs. What is the best way to apply those resources to those needs? Understanding that not every need will be addressed equally, and in fact, not every need may even be addressed. What is the most strategic way to do that? The board spent time reaffirming the district mission regarding our general educational mission, and also spent time developing board goals. Those are shared with us in the backup tonight and can serve as a reference for conversations that we might have in the future. Last year, as we were looking at the strategic plan, we picked closing the achievement gap for students who are disadvantaged by any number of reasons, whether the students are socioeconomically challenged, whether students are English learners, whether students are learning disabled, that there is a profound achievement gap between the achievement of those students and read the success of those students and the success of the general of the population in general. And the board identified that as a critical issue for the one of the board's goals is to conduct business in as transparent a way as possible. And we were attempting to develop this budget in as transparent a way as possible. We went to a variety of constituents within the organization. We went to elementary principals, secondary principals. We went to curriculum councils, elementary representatives. We went to curriculum councils, secondary representatives. We went to classified management. We went to PTA presidents. We went to district directors and so forth, and approached each of those groups separately and said, what are our next steps? What are the needs that we have within our organization? And not only the representatives gave us input, but they went to their constituents who also provided input as well to us. And we developed a massive list, a wish list, if you will, of things that the organization would benefit from. We defined those things in terms of objectives. And in the board's backup tonight, you can see something that is listed as potential objectives for 07-08. I would emphasize that those objectives represent sort of the entire landscape of possibilities within the school district, and I don't think anybody was ever operating with the assumption that every one of those objectives would become the central focus of the strategic plan, but that certain objectives would perhaps be dominant and perhaps certain objectives would be partially addressed by the strategic plan. We went through those objectives that came from that whole variety of groups, and we costed out, we defined specific efforts that the district might make in those areas. Again, those came forward from the groups. And we costed out what it would cost to implement certain certain solutions or remedies to the needs that were brought forward. We costed out approximately $1.6 million worth of solutions. There were more than that that were offered, and so there were certain items that we didn't go so far as to cost out because, frankly, once we got to $1.6 million, we believed we had sort of captured the will of the organization plus the capacity of the organization at that particular point. The board has in its backup tonight the sort of shorthand version of each of those efforts and what they would cost. And you can see that in the document called Related Budget Options. But for a reference, we've also included a glossary of each one of those objects, which you can use as a reference to if a particular nomenclature throws you, and there is some nomenclature in there that will throw you, you can find the object in the glossary and find out what it's about, and certainly staff would be willing to explain that as well. Then the question comes down to prioritization. We went to each of the groups that we mentioned, and we said, look, here's a 1.6 the group to prioritize about $1 million worth of one-time expenditures. The tiers 1 through 4 were designated for ongoing expenses, and the one-time group was for dollars that would be spent in a single year and then have to either be revisited or abandoned in a subsequent year. We explained to the groups, just so that you'll understand the kind of context that the information you're looking at came out of, we explained to the groups a view of what Russell just shared with us right now, and that is that budget times are tight. It would be unlikely that we would get beyond the first tier, which would be $400,000, actually more than what Russell is projecting at this point. That it's conceivable we might not get all the way through tier one. So choose your tier one very carefully. We also said that one-time monies actually may have a higher likelihood of being funded because we have probably greater and more immediate access to one-time money than we may have to ongoing money. So in that context, the groups prioritized their interests. What we have in the backup tonight also is a sharing of each one of those groups' prioritizations, and you can see what items of that $1.6 million went into tier one from the point of view of each of those groups and what went into lower tiers later on. We think that the exercise is kind of important from a couple of standpoints. Number one is it gives us the prioritization of the groups, but secondly, we didn't just say make up some kind of budget out of the blue of $1.6 million, we felt it was far more practical to provide the groups with a template or a sample budget, which had four tiers and $1.6 million and $1 million worth of one-time money, and hand that to the group and say, this kind of represents what we're hearing. Again, it was somewhat of a product of one here, but this is kind of what we're hearing from all of the groups combined. Go back to this template budget and change anything you want so that it more closely represents what your group sees as being necessary within the school district. The exercise was interesting and I think beneficial to the extent that people were no longer simply creating wish lists, but they were trading critical issues. That if someone wanted to change the budget, they were certainly free to do. Groups were certainly free to do that. But in order to put something into Tier 1 that wasn't already in Tier 1, they would have to take something out of Tier 1 in order to make room for it. A very, very difficult and painful process. And as we listen tonight to the input for a greater emphasis upon ag education, greater emphasis upon career technical education, greater emphasis, all of them very, very excellent ideas. This exercise would be very difficult for those folks because we're also into teaching reading, and we're also into helping English learners learn English, and we're also into providing programs in the arts, and we're also into providing you name it. Work up scenarios that hopefully look like the kind of input you give us. As we get closer and closer to having solid figures for the budget, we will come forward with I will come forward with the superintendent's recommendation for the budget as well, but it'll be side by side with the input from the organization. With that, I'll shut up and open this up to you.
Thank you very much, Chris. Dr. Valentine, the structure, I think, is helpful and very easy, at least, to follow, and the development of it makes sense from the beginning. I know it's 10:25, and I apologize to everybody, but there was one thing I wanted to try to do tonight, is to have the board consider a couple of general directions or ideas. And what I wanted to talk about in terms of not only the budget process for this year, but also our review of our strategic planning objectives that were discussed last year and that we're going to rediscuss for the next school year. And I want to start that just by asking the board at some time, and I know you've done this probably every night, I know before you go to bed, is to read the board mission and goals, especially the last sentence under district mission, the student achievement and well-being, the budget development, the employee recruitment and retention, and the community confidence. Just at some point in time, reread those in the sense of what we're here for the students and for the community. And then I'd like you to take that forward as we discuss the budget for this coming year and our strategic planning and look at certain things that I would like to discuss further with other board members and with the administration and with the school community. Starting on the first page of the strategic planning, when you go down to number 11, this is something where it says we will maintain support for students exhibiting at-risk behavior that we unfortunately come into contact with during expulsion hearings. And I would ask that the board consider adding language where the district would develop options to address these issues and the impact that those options would have on the behavior that allows a student to get to where they are. So when we have our hearings, that we consider certain things like having the Family Services Resource Director provide a report that said, this is what's available in the community, this is what else can be done to support our students who are at a very difficult point. That's a part of strategic planning. We discussed that at the last expulsion hearing. Moving on to the next page where it says building learning communities, I would ask the board to consider adding language that not only discusses collaboration but also discusses teacher learning and collaboration on existing standards based on integrating in instructional courses that may be new to the district in terms of visual and performing arts. So it's not only collaboration on what exists, but what may exist. And then on developing programs, I'd like the board and the community to consider a change in the language where it says develop a delivery system for standards-based visual and performing arts, which complements our efforts. I think personally that complements is the wrong word in that vision, because complement indicates something that's added on or something that's brought along later. And I think over the years, since visual performing arts has been dropped from our curriculum because of budget issues, there's always been inconsistent, non-sequential art. And that we have our district initiate and continue a partnership with the City of San Luis Obispo to develop and maintain safe bike paths and walking paths to our schools. And I know you've started that, and I think we should have that as part of our vision ongoing, that we want to commit, considering what tragedies we've had in the past, that our district works with the city during construction and development of other programs as part of our vision and goals for our students. And then finally, in terms of something I would like to continue for the board to discuss, is under recruitment and retention, that there be a third point added. And that third point would be that we would look at, as part of our vision, hiring and retaining teachers whose training includes visual and performing art classes and credits from the universities for which they receive their certification. So in the future, when we do hire teachers, they come with that training to integrate fully sequential visual and performing arts curriculum into our school district. So we have people who are already trained, who share our vision, hopefully in terms of how the board develops it. So I appreciate everybody's time at the end of a long meeting.
Okay, and then Dave and then Mark.
I just want to say, too, that I support John on that. I highlighted the developing programs issue specifically and was going to raise some of those issues. So thank you. I think that was a great recommendation. I had a question just about the budget. Where did the $1.6 million figure come from that for the purposes of the exercise could be allocated in a discretionary way?
It was largely connected to just costing out what we felt were the major items of interest to the group. It worked out to be $1.6 million.
Okay.
And so that was the figure.
And said, how would you reallocate it? Yeah. But is that a real amount that is or has existed within our budget as a discretionary amount that...
No.
Okay. It isn't. Okay. So in other words, so the budget that was displayed up here, the unrestricted funds were $46 million. The total budget is roughly 60 when you lob in the restricted funds, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Can I insert also that the $1.6 million represents funding to items that are not currently in the budget, that it implies that the status quo of the 06-07 budget will continue.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman. As we go into this strategic planning, one of the questions I would have as we look at the strategic planning objectives for 2006 and 2007 is to get some kind of feeling for how did we do on those. And I don't want to make a lot of work, and it could be just anecdotal, but it would help me to understand whether these need to be included. Maybe there's some that can be eliminated. Maybe there's some, as John is suggesting, that we need to add to. So I'd like to see some kind of evaluation if we could.
Just a quick follow-up to the budget. So the $1.6 million, or the first tier, $400,000, is if... you know, the chips fall.
The piece that you haven't gotten yet as a board member, but 85% of our expenditures are locked into contracts with employees, either in salaries or benefits or taxes or something related to payroll in essence. And then there are about 2, maybe 3% of our budget which is free money. The rest of the money after payroll is designated for utilities, gasoline, things to run services that we provide and keep the lights on and the doors open. So in reality, what we have is we absolutely must have incremental increases in our revenues each year to be able to add new programs. If we were a revenue limit district suffering the declining enrollment that we have, we wouldn't be talking about adding programs. We'd be talking about what elements of our budget we need to cut to match the reduction in revenues. Because we're fortunate to have a property tax base that is incrementally increasing, one year it didn't on us, and we had $10 million in budget cuts. But that was about 5 years ago now, 4 years ago. Now we're in an incremental increase, and we can talk about what things are value added for our students, and that's where we're at. But I'd be more than happy to explore any of those questions you have, either with the board as a whole or individually if you need to, and we can get down to specifics.
I think it would be great to have that overview, sort of the big picture, the big pie chart that shows. I think it's not only helpful for us, but it's helpful for other groups that come before the board and are advocating for investment in whatever area that they're advocating for.
We used to do that a lot, especially with CAD. It's really interesting to see how categorical money is spent in the pie chart world. You know, how much is salaries now? And one of the aspects of categorical programs is it's been reduced by both the feds and state over the last two or three years specifically, and as it has, our percentages of salaries that are being funded by Title I and other categorical programs, it's eating up the whole pie. So salaries are now eating up the whole pie of categorical programs. That wasn't always true in the past 10 years.
I think, and just to follow up on that, I think we can certainly go back to the years where we cut $10 million and closed schools, and we have lists of what went down in those particular cuts, and then since then we have the lists of what's been added back since then, which may give you some idea of where discretionary capital is gone.
I second what Mr. Spadafore said in every way, and I also had starred the one on standards-based visual and performing arts instruction. I'm talking about facilities. I was at the school board conference, of course, in December, and I talked to a guy about solar energy for school districts, for the whole district. And he was saying that you take out a loan and you put in solar panels for your whole district that's on the grid, and then you pay off the loan with the amount of money that you would spend on your electricity normally, and after, and I think you said 15 years, I can't remember the number, then you don't have any
above and beyond what we are currently doing under the strategic plan that we adopted last year.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm with Mr. Buckman, and I think we would all benefit from, you know, we went into the strategic plan last year, I think, knowing that many of the items were going to be, would not be completed in 1 year's time, that it was going to take a period of time. They would need to be ongoing before we really saw results. But the areas in which you're able to show us results, I'd love to see how we've done on implementing that. On the one-time money, I believe I understand, but could you just explain briefly the $175,000 for Pacheco support?
Thank you. The issue with Pacheco is that, as you know, Pacheco is a dual language program. It supports the largest number of English learners in our school district and English learners from around our school district. Pacheco Elementary School benefited from a Title VII grant, which brought them about $240,000 a year over a four-year period. They stretched that $240,000, providing services to English learners and, of course, to the dual immersion language concept, too, for a period that was longer than 4 years. I believe it was five, but it might have been six as well. That money has since run out, but the function that Pacheco performs for our English learners continues to be a priority, particularly in that notion of closing the achievement gap. One of the things that we can show in evaluations of things that are going on in the school district regarding the strategic plan is the value that's added by Pacheco in terms of student achievement through the particular model that it represents. If Pacheco did not exist, additional resources would have to be distributed around the district, and I think we would find that we would have not nearly the effect and greater cost than what it would cost to support Pacheco. If I could add to that also, it appears in our one-time money, I'm sorry, since that was part of your question and my brain is not too sharp, is that Pacheco has applied for a foreign language grant now that would be approximately 4 years, approximately $150,000 if it were successful. And while I think everybody supported Pacheco, the interest in putting it in the one-time slot instead of the ongoing slot is to await and see what the outcome of that grant application is. If it's not successful, then we're going to need to make a decision. The board is going to need to make a decision regarding the future of Pacheco with ongoing dollars.
Okay, thank you. And then my colleagues have, or several of my colleagues have expressed an interest in an increased allocation to visual and performing arts, or a stated desire to really be invested in visual and performing arts as a district.
Mr. President?
Yeah.
One other point that has occurred to me, and it had to do with what Dave was talking about earlier on the technology piece. 3 years ago, our technology system was crumbling around our ears. We had the inability to maintain any computers whatsoever. They were piling up in the hallways. They were unusable. And we weren't able to deliver to the kids any kind of a technology plan. This board invested millions, literally millions of dollars in resurrecting that. And we've gotten to the point where we are using technology at all grade levels now in our district. And I wouldn't argue with you if your statement was we could do better. We absolutely could do better. But when we do our budget process, your choices are going to be very, very difficult in terms of using technology as an example of a topic tonight that gained a lot of interest. You know, you can go out there and you can add 500 more computers to our standard, but you're going to have to add people to maintain them. You're going to have to add different elements of support to the structure. And then what are you not going to be able to provide? VAPA, you won't be able to provide PE. You won't be able to provide something else. It's a bad, bad time to have to make these choices. But that's illustrative of three topics that have come up tonight, which you're going to be wrestling with, and it's just the nature of the game is in terms of education today.
May I just to add to that thought also, the notion of a strategic plan implies making some decisions about where the majority of the organization's energy will go. There are big needs that need to be addressed. Certainly closing the achievement gap is one that can consume an entire organization and will take a long time to generate the kinds of results that we are looking to achieve. To the extent that we dilute our efforts from that, we are going to postpone or even perhaps distance ourselves from achieving those particular goals, but we will achieve other goals that are of interest to the organization. One of the difficult parts of this whole process is making those Sophie's choices of can we define a direction for the school district and do we have the organizational will to stick with it?
And as we go through this process, I know we're focusing on several areas, but my dream is opportunities and options for students, whether it be visual and performing arts or vocation, career technical education, athletics. Just a recognition, and I know that we, in our hearts, we feel this, but a recognition that options for students are good, and that the more ways we can look at options for students to be successful and connect with schools, the better off our students are going to be. So I'm just going to close with that. Mrs. Roger?
I just wanted to remind us, remind all of us that, you know, we spent a lot of time working primary and the most valuable use of our resources for me personally. So for everything that we decide that is a competing interest, we need to ask ourselves, what are we willing to give up? What are we willing to remove from the list of things that we're working on? And also be mindful that where we deviate, it's going to take staff some time to get up and running on anything new that we bring in. So that's my late night wet blanket comment for for tonight.
Okay, shall we move on to the action consent agenda? You ready? Okay. Item 11, please let me know if you want it pulled and any public comment on this. Item 11, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 12, approval of required federal assurances as an addition to the SELPA local plan. 11, we're asking for an 11 pull. Okay. 13, acceptance of donations, I'd like that pulled. 14, disposition of surplus property. 15, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 16, approval of purchase orders. 17, approval of warrants and payroll. And 18, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement.
I make a motion that we approve 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18.
It's been moved by Mr. Spadafore and seconded by Mrs. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. Item number 11, Mrs. Roger.
Okay, on item 11, I was looking through the stipends for coaching and activities, and I called Mr. Miller with a question that I had, because I began to notice that the stipends were not the same from high school in the same coaching capacities. And his knee-jerk reaction, because he wasn't sure exactly why they were different, but his knee-jerk was, I think it probably has something to do with like seniority. Time and grade and seniority, right. Okay. And, of course, he was correct, and as he is always correct, but I had to go to Pete Zotovich to find out that he was. So the reason that I pulled this item is that there are several positions that have not realized any change in their stipend over numerous years, 10 years or more. And apparently it's because these people are not negotiated for by the teachers' union when these stipends are negotiated. Have I got that wrong, Rick?
Yes. We
these
have
positions?
All of the stipends, every stipend we offer, every extra duty assignment is part of a built-in increase. It's a set amount. You get this much money if you do this job, and until that is negotiated again, either to have a longevity increase or to have just a one-time increase, it stays stable. So there are certain stipends within this structure that do not have any increase, but it has nothing to do with people being inside or outside the bargaining unit. They're all just part of the same contract. Right. Is that clear?
Yeah, it's clear. I would be a really cranky person if I was in one of those stipend positions that was not adjusted over 10 or 15 years. So I understand there is or has been something called a stipend committee.
There has been a stipend committee. It's part of, again, when we go into enter into negotiations with the Teachers Association, anytime that's a reopener and there wants to be a revisiting of the stipends, we sit down and do it. That wasn't the case in the last three-year agreement, and it hasn't been a sunshine issue from either party in this year's current negotiations.
Can you remember the last time it was the subject of discussion and negotiation?
The contract before last, so 2 years ago, we changed the base salary amount of the stipends. So it effectively increased all of the stipends a certain amount because it's based on the first year base salary, the entry level salary for a teacher. So there was a increase that occurred across the board because of the base was increased. But we have not had any major adjustments to the salary structure in stipends for well before my tenure. And I think the last time we had any major change was when we were in layoff mode and budget-cutting mode, to where we cut a lot of the stipends out of the budget.
So if we wanted to look at certain stipend positions, the appropriate way to do that would be to, if it were a board interest, it would be something that we would, Sunshine has an interest in the next contract negotiation cycle next year.
That would be the most appropriate way.
Okay. Thank you. I'll move approval of item 11.
Second.
It's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. I just wanted to point out on item number 13, one of the donations is not a donation of money but a donation of time, and that's that Morro Bay High School student and Boy Scout Tyler Hoyt donated time, energy, materials, and supplies to construct a Los Osos Middle School sign to be placed at the top of the El Morro parking lot here at Los Osos Middle School, and that this was done as part of the requirements for him to earn a rank of Eagle Scout. And
that's
I just
awesome.
Wanted to point out that Tyler Hoyt is a great kid. He's a musician and an athlete at Morro Bay High School. His mom is an employee of the district. And just thanks to Tyler. And again, this is Troop 214, and we have several kids that are part of Troop 214. And they've done a lot of great stuff for our community. So congratulations, Tyler. I move approval of item number 13.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 20, advanced agenda. I have a suggestion. I was thinking, you know, the major concern I have is the AYP, but I think that might be something instructive. And so I'm suggesting that before we dive into recommending another study session, that we give it some thought and see if this has some resonance with board members, and that might be of interest to us because it is something we've been talking an awful lot about.
Would that be components of it?
Sure.
You seem to know.
Is that going to be would that lead to like recommendations
yes.
for more specific, you know, like Mark gave us this fixed
yes.
documents,
that's
more
exactly
specific recommendations to Congress or whatever?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
We'll discuss that.
Yeah, and I would just like maybe we can discuss the idea of whether this is something we want to have as a study session at the next board meeting.
There are outside people that come in and actually
yeah.
lead that.
And the second thing I have an interest in as a start, I realize that the administration is exquisitely busy these days, but I have an interest in whether there are states in the United States that have done any movement toward legislation that might or could lead to a limitation on attorneys' fees in special education cases. And so I have an interest in that. And I don't know if that's something we want to do in a Friday packet or just an information item that we might want to have presented to the board and perhaps to the public. And do I have support on that?
Yes,
yeah.
You do.
Okay.
And
how about you want to start with Friday packet? And then
I'm happy to start with a Friday packet, but this is an item that I have an awful lot of interest in. Mr. Buckman?
I'm not necessarily asking for support tonight, but I'd like to start again percolating. I've had at least two complaints or two phone calls, conversations with people about the weight of backpacks, and it was 48 pounds on a 68-pound child. I don't know. It may have been an exaggeration, but it was a lot of books, and I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe it's a Friday.
I think they need to feed the kid more food.
Roy Grandy dealt with that by getting a class set of textbooks, so kids don't have to bring their books to school. It's expensive, but when you talk about health and someone with a permanently lower shoulder and things like that, it does make a difference. Should we put the solar energy thing on for a future agenda? I'd have to dig out that guy's business card.
any suggestions that are made after 11 p.m. have to be disregarded.
Okay. We got 5 minutes.
Am I up? I think one thing that would be really useful is getting back to the budget issue and doing a deeper dive on the big picture of our budget and how the resources that we're allocating are going toward the strategic plan. I can't tell you how many times somebody comes up to me and says, off the cuff, well, you know, we're spending $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000 a year on this, and it's not a fact, but they've heard that figure from somewhere. And why the heck aren't we spending that?
Sunk the administration for the evening. Dr. Valentine, you're looking awfully chipper. How about item number 21, reports by board members and district administrators? Mr. Spadafor.
This isn't a report, but a very nice woman came up and asked if we would consider, she lives here on the coast, if we would consider putting the board members' names on the agenda. So when people came to the meeting, they would know ahead of time who the board members were, because she doesn't have a computer, so she can't go on the internet.
We could just wear Target.
We have big name things?
I would want that researched only in the sense that I realize that there are limitations on what board members can have their names on. Otherwise, it looks political. So I don't know if is it okay?
It would be okay. Less than 250 distribution, and if it's
better use your mic. Your Mark. Okay.
Yeah, it was Mrs. Gwynne Taylor who asked, because she doesn't have a computer, she doesn't know who the board members are, and she hadn't been to a meeting in, she thinks she said, 30 years. And she needed to reacquaint herself with what who was here and what was happening. She wanted the names of the board members on the agenda. She asked if that could be done. I said I would mention it at the end of the meeting, because she said she was going to watch this over the weekend. I said I would mention it. Great.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
You have to call Mrs. Taylor and tell her that, okay?
Are you Walter Millard in it?
Are we ready for item number 21?
That would be adjournment.
Reports by board members and district administrators. Anybody? Dr. Valentine.
Just a happy announcement that Del Mar Elementary School was selected for the Title I Academic Achievement Award in California. It is a collection of schools that are selected as being the top performing Title I element or Title I schools in California. He will be honored in Costa Mesa later this month.
Great.
And he and they.
Yes, yay Del Mar. And several of us went to the Bishop Peak 50th anniversary dinner. That was pretty exciting. Yeah, it was great food and really fun. I was fortunate enough to be asked to participate in the Del Mar PTA auction, and I understand they raised about $24,000. It was pretty exciting, and somewhere around there anyway. And then I got the opportunity yesterday to be invited by the symphony to the kids' concert and a luncheon, and it was wonderful. I actually met Mr. Harris, our PDK layperson of the year. It was great. So it was a wonderful, busy week. Anybody else?
Just
Mr. Buckman.
Just really briefly, only because others have, but I have been representing the district at the ROP board meetings. We had this district hosted the meeting this month, and the children from San Luis High School did an excellent job in a new competition that will be being done with the FFA. And we did look at athletic training and one other item as new courses that will be offered. And the course I asked whether they'd be CSU UC compatible.